This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, everybody. It is Jeff Cannata with 2Ns1T here to help confirm your weekend. You may notice we are sans Garnett this episode. He is deep inside the technological maelstrom that is CES. But fear not, faithful listener, for I have assembled a veritable Avengers-quality team of video game pundits for you. I'm going to announce them now. First up, the Iron Man of Indies, the high-tech hero who shines a stark light on small games for your sake, my namesake, for God's sake, it's Jeff Mattis.
That was fucking awesome.
And next up is our returning champion, unthawed from the ice of the frozen East Coast, the Canadian Captain America, the man who sticks the joy in joystick.com, Zab Dimatos.
It is awesome to be back, and I'm going to leave now because that's all I needed. That was a great intro.
And finally, folks, my friend and former co-host, the mighty Thor of film lore. And if you've ever watched TRS Outtakes, you know the true god of blunder, who hammers home his opinions like enlightening lightning, Dan Trachtenberg.
The only time it will ever be compared to Thor, the god of thunder.
There's actually, I should note, an addendum I must add to your intro, because some big news has
dude
hit the world with a big, big footprint already. Dan is going to be directing the Why the Last Man movie.
Yes.
Thank you.
Couldn't be a more perfect project for you, a true fan. If you guys haven't read the Why the Last Man comic book, read it so immediately. Good. It's awesome. Dan.
Or pre-purchase your tickets.
Pre-order at DanTrachtenberg.com.
No, definitely read the comic book. It's an incredible story. It's one of the greatest we have.
So we managed to land you as your first appearance since the news has
hit. So what questions do you guys have? What do you want to know?
Well, on the way over in the car, you told me you've already cast Mark Wahlberg.
Right.
And he's going to have organic web shooters, Yorick is, I hear.
Yes,
now.
Organic web shooters, and Ampersand will be played by The Rock.
And a lot of changes. You just kept saying, wow. So many changes.
So many changes.
Hero is just CGI now. She's not even a real person anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
That scene where Yorick is locked to that thing and he just goes, no! The end of the world for all men. No!
I think that'd be cool. I don't really care what anyone else
it's turning into movie 43 all of a sudden.
Awesome. Well, actually, this is not a movie podcast, although I'm sure movies will come up. We're talking video games, and this week has been CES, which is obviously where Garnett is. So he's going to come back next week with some firsthand reports of all the really cool stuff he's seen. I can't wait to hear about it. But we have been reading reports, those of us that have stayed here, from the outside. And there's a lot of video game news coming out of CES. Steam boxes or not Steam boxes, as the case may be.
My personal most exciting thing to come out of the show, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Which one of the numerous said boxes?
No, just, well, I mean, I haven't got...
We've got pistons and shields and...
Oh, no. Steam box.
Oh, the idea of the Steam
the
box.
The idea of the Steam box is incredibly exciting to me. Although, it'll be interesting to see, because, I am a PC gamer, so it'll be interesting to see, like, how much of an advantage am I really going to be wanting to fork over... is the closed platform sort of thing that they're doing while still remaining open in certain ways? Are you going to get an advantage over gaming on that machine versus,
What do you mean by closed platform? You mean set specs? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, set specs, and then also while they're not gating it
Windows does, for example.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's it's sort of unclear to me how that'll all bear out and what sort of advantages that'll give the box over something like a new Xbox or a PS4. But
well, Valve is investing in the company that makes modular PCs, so you can effectively upgrade that stuff on a hardware level. The only thing that I'm concerned about with that is that it's going to run Linux, which, I mean, a lot of games on Steam, they just added Linux support to Steam. So then at a certain point, for Valve games, I'm sure they'll just create Linux versions. That's fine. But for third parties, are they really going to invest the money in order to make a Linux version and then a Mac version and PC version? Like, that's the only issue that I think might come up.
Yeah. I mean, it may be a situation where they're waiting to see what the initial install base is like. Like, how many core people pick it up.
Well,
it's also pricey, too. Like, I don't know, you know, what you're getting for that extra money in terms of a technological advantage over a PC.
Well, if this is a machine that's built to be a Steam box, and it sounds like it's going to be numerous form factors, companies, you know, ways to get in on that. But if that's the design, I would assume that, or not assume, but I would hope that Valve would make Steam kind of handle all that stuff for you. Like, you don't have to care that it's running Linux, because all you do is you load up Steam and Steam handles that for you, and you download game X and it just plays it.
Well, I don't know if they can. I don't know the process. Like, I don't know the technical stuff behind it. And they haven't really talked about, other than the fact that, yeah, we're working on this thing. And they said that we probably won't even see anything to come to market in 2013.
Right.
So it's probably going to take a while. But I just think that on a third-party level, that's something that I'm sure that they're working with people on. I mean, Steam, if you want to make a PC game, if it's not on Steam, I mean, you're really sort of in the dark.
Yeah.
So.
And what were the – because we heard about a Steam box before – right. What were the CES specific announcements about Steambox?
Well, there was a gallery of pictures that Engadget posted of various iterations that were all happening in Valve's booth of what potential Steamboxes could look like.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the physical device itself.
Yeah, and there were a wide variety of looking things.
Yeah.
And no innards. We don't know what they consist of, but it was all sort of like design ideas. And then there was this piston thing, which Valve came out quickly and said, this is not an official Steambox thing, but we are partnering with them to make it. And the piston, I don't know if you saw it, but it looks like a carburetor.
Mm-hmm.
It's real compact, real small. It's a brilliant little piece of design. Like, it comes apart and it's upgradable. So you can actually, they say you can send in, part of it when a new graphics card comes out, and they'll like give you credit and help you upgrade it, and so you can keep current, which is pretty rad.
Yeah, that's the modular. That's the modular part of that machine. That company actually, I think it's like XI, or I think it might be the name of the company. They tried to kickstart that box a couple of times and failed, and then Valve just invested in them, and they don't own the company, but they've invested in that company to create these modular boxes that you just like swap out parts, so you can keep upgrading like a PC. Because it's effectively just a computer.
It is.
Right? It's not like a 360.
If I have a good PC that has a good graphics card and plays games, and why do I want a Steambox?
Well, the Steambox, and this is sort of like in the future, or the future of Steambox.
In the year 2020
or something. but so they're saying that it'll act as a server. In addition to, you know, being a computer, you know, standard game playing machine, you can also. You know, I think I was reading, I might have been on The Verge, an interview with Newell about being able to basically post once the next gen after Kepler GPU comes out, the box will be set up so that you can basically have 8 monitors spread throughout your house, all hooked to the Steam box, all people logging in separately and playing a game with no latency.
Very cool.
From anywhere in your house.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So like that kind of like, you know, with that in mind already, I mean, that's years away. But I mean, the fact that they're thinking about that kind of stuff is very exciting. I mean, I don't think any closed platform before that has really, you know, thought that far ahead, because they're like, well, 5 to 7 years, we're going to be making another box, basically.
Yeah.
We're not changing out hardware in our
system. I think that – I think the excitement around it is twofold. The first is we're at the end of a console cycle. So as you and I have talked about a lot of times, Dan, games just look better on PC now. We're at that point where PC games are where you want to play stuff. And so people are excited about figuring out a way to hook up their PC to their televisions. And so the idea of hooking up a PC to a TV seems really desirable, especially now, because it's like, well, you know, when a new Xbox or a new PS game system comes out, I think it's going to steal a little of that thunder. But the other side of it, I think, is these form factors are getting to the point now where it's not this big, like, MIDI tower case sitting next to your television. It's these kind of elegant little things that can fit in the living room and not be a big honking computer.
And you don't even need an optical drive in those things anymore.
Right.
Right. It's like everything.
Well, Steam, there's no purpose to have one. Right.
Right.
But yeah, it's exactly. Funny. Almost all of the Steam boxes they were showing at the Valve booth had CD or DVD-ROM drives in them.
I think that that's part of the server situation where they wanted to make it more of like a whole complete media experience as well.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it would run like XBMC or anything like that. But the thing that I you guys were talking last week about Sony and the RFID tag on games,
right,
like linking them to a system.
Right.
I think Steam is sort of has been doing this essentially for a real long time because you buy all your games on Steam. You can never trade them in. They're yours for good.
Yeah.
So I think people are sort of already used to it on the PC side. And on the PC side, too, they already have like Steam Big Picture mode, which you can plug your TV right into your computer right into your TV. And it's really elegant and it works with a controller. And I think that this the Steam box or whatever it end up being called is a really elegant way to get that UI and that service just right on your computer. Sort of like what OnLive does with like putting it in smart TVs already and having those services available to people.
Well, Jeff, you said you had an experience where it wasn't elegant and wasn't...
What, Big Picture?
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I should probably go back and troubleshoot a little bit. But my experience with Big Picture mode was, you know, follow the instructions, which are really simple. It's like, you know, have Steam on, plug your HDMI cable into your graphics card and into your smart TV, and it should work. And what ended up happening with me was I got my... desktop wallpaper appeared on my TV, but none of the icons, none of the Steam UI, none of that sort of stuff. So it was like, it was almost like this weird.
Did you have another monitor hooked up at the same time?
Yeah. But I mean,
you probably had your primary set incorrectly. Like you have to change your primary to the television because Steam will always run in your primary screen.
Yep, that's a good point. That's a total. That's a very newbie mistake. But yeah, I think you're right. I know.
Well, it was nice seeing you, and we're going to have to ask you.
I know. I'm turning in my.
I was going to suggest you just reset. But
was it plugged in?
Power plugged in.
Power cycle.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Now, how does this compare to the Project Shield? Because my impression of the Project Shield is that it is something similar to how you guys are describing Steambox, other than the fact that you just are running something off of your existing PC. You aren't buying a new
Well,
box
Shield
unit.
Is, I mean, as much as we have over and over declared mobile gaming, dedicated mobile gaming devices dead on this show, to a lot of our listeners' chagrins. It seems like we're in the minority because companies are still making them and they're like making new ones. But
Shield looked to me like a Wii U for your PC.
It is. It basically adds that functionality.
Right.
But it's also a mobile PC game. It's like Vita for PC. Android, really.
It's technically mobile, but given how big the thing is, I don't know how mobile it really is. Like, it's not mobile like a phone or an iPad. Even an iPad would be. It is like you're not going to be. I would not be comfortable walking down the street. I would want to be sitting somewhere.
Like, so what's the point then? Is it like the Wii U where you sort of have this screen in your lap?
What's the point is sort of – that's the best question, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I love the idea of if I – now I finally put a new graphics card in my PC and I'm excited to play some high-end games when Crysis 3 comes out or what have you. I will now be playing in my PC instead of my Xbox. I'm excited that I can play Crysis 3 sitting on my couch with if I had Project Shield on my – giant screen TV as opposed to in my computer on its monitor.
Now, did you play any mess around with OnLive at all with streaming?
I didn't, but shouldn't this hopefully be better than that experience?
Well, it would pretty much need to be, but there are still, I mean, even in, you know, best real world situations, people were complaining about, it's games are playable, but if you're getting into anything that's remotely competitive or, you know, twitchy or whatever, the latency is
like, it becomes an issue.
Yeah, it becomes
I don't really problem. Know too much about Project Shield, but I mean, is it essentially creating...
Well, Sam Jackson is like the head dude.
I was waiting for someone to bring that up.
Amazing.
Is it specifically tied to you and your library? It's not actually accessing games off of another server. It's off of your content, right? So the latency in your own network probably won't be that much of an issue. I mean, OnLive was a problem because you were accessing a server God knows where, and then it was sending signal.
And then that brings up the point of, okay, well, it's portable, but you have to use it within range of your own PC's, you know.
Yeah, that
no,
is
you
the
don't.
Way.
I mean, I it think, also doesn't that,
Does it have its own hardware?
Well, doesn't it also – it's not just for streaming. It also, like, can play Android games.
Oh.
Well, right.
That's, I mean, that's the whole part of it, is that it plays like these, iOS.
And, well, it's these next level iOS games that will be made for the Tegra 4, which is...
You're not going to be sitting on the bus playing Skyrim, in other words.
Right. Well, it doesn't have the hardware to support
theoretically,
that.
No.
Theoretically,
no. But you'll be playing Raven Sword.
Oh, yeah.
With this.
Which
is what I'm saying. But
which I can
probably
already,
not on the bus.
Right. Yeah, true. No, I mean, I don't know.
I mean,
no,
it's not
I'm
an
not impressed
device.
With the. I'm not at all drawn to this, and I don't. I can't imagine anyone would be for a commute device. To me, it's like a Wii U with awesome games that I theoretically already own or will be purchasing in the future, and I don't. I already have my PC, and
it's when your TV screen is occupied. It's when your TV screen is occupied and you want to have another screen in your lap?
Or, no, play those games like it's my next console. I can play a PC game on my TV. And
right,
my PC's chilling in the same
place. But, I mean,
that's
only one tiny portion of its functionality.
So, but, like, the other thing would be, like, you can play all these awesome PC games on this portable device, quote-unquote portable.
With this own screen.
But, I mean...
It's a little clamshell screen.
The whole idea of Steam
adorable.
Big Picture is, like, you get your giant televisions to play PC games, right? But then you're going to play all these amazing PC, gorgeous PC games on this tiny little screen. That's like the opposite, I think. Of
well,
what
I think like
is.
That would just be when, as the, like the Wii U is sold, when your wife or significant other or whatever roommate comes in the room and wants to watch his favorite TV show. You suddenly are playing on your little screen, I guess.
Yeah, don't underestimate the power of being able to play a game while dropping a deuce.
Also that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm a skeptic.
About dropping deuces?
No. No, what? That I fully support on a regular basis.
As regular as possible.
Amazing.
So
I'm still confused with the Steam Bot. I mean, I love the idea of I don't have to worry about upgrading my own thing. I like hand it in and they upgrade it and then I get it back and with whatever you're talking about.
Yeah.
But it seems like almost like it's like this evergreen device now. We can have this new thing in our living room that a new console comes out, don't need to worry about it. Is it Microsoft? Is it Sony? I don't care. I have my unit that will play any of those games.
This solves that problem
a
little, I
think. And as the graphics get better, it will be constantly getting better. It's so like that's pretty cool.
And also I think it's a lot of the excitement around it is generated from how much people are enthusiastic about Steam as a delivery device because of the variable pricing, because of the accessibility of sort of smaller, quick, community-based games, and just how much you can get and the great sales that they have. You know, all that stuff has generated such a loyalty to that idea that I think people are like, yeah, make that my console. I'm ready to play that living room.
And if you get more of your average consumers playing, like if you get Steam into the living room of, you know, somebody that doesn't necessarily have a gaming PC, developers might start looking at that and going, you know what? We don't have, I mean, we can still use PC as our lead development platform, but we can, you know, basically not sort of scale things down as much as we normally would because we know that it's going to be on, you know, 360 or whatever. You actually have a home console that can run this stuff at PC level graphics. So you're not, you know, you don't sort of miss that step. You don't play stuff. The reason that things look so great on PC, they could look a lot better than they do right now, but they don't want somebody playing Borderlands on PC to look at the, you know, console version and, you know, start crying.
I mean, if this had a good price point and was marketed right and it really took off and a lot of people had these in their homes and a casual – like families had this in their homes, wouldn't it theoretically kill consoles like consoles killed arcade machines? Like doesn't it make consoles obsolete in a way?
Unless
people didn't buy it.
Yeah. You know, Xbox has exclusive games and Sony has exclusive games. And
And then Half-Life 3 comes out. And then,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a little break. We're going to talk a little more about CES on the way back. And we got lots more. We got some interesting games to talk about. Yes, we're going to talk about your comments about our ideas for what MMOs can be like that we talked about last week. I know Mattis is going to talk about some interesting indie titles. We got a whole lot coming up. So stick with us. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service for 30 days. My recommendation is Scoundrels Star Wars by Timothy Zahn, who is an awesome Star Wars author. And it's narrated by Mark Thompson, who is amazing. His accents and Star Wars voices are incredible. Here's a little blurb about the story. To make his biggest score, Han's ready to take even bigger risks, but he can't do this job solo. Yeah, Han Solo should be basking in his moment of glory. After all, the cocky smuggler and captain of the Millennium Falcon just played a key role in the daring raid that destroyed the Death Star and landed the first serious blow to the Empire in its war against the Rebel Alliance. But after losing the reward his heroics earned him, Han's got nothing to celebrate, especially since he's deep in debt to the ruthless crime lord Jabba the Hutt. Perhaps you've heard of him. There's a bounty on Han's head, and if he can't cough up the credits, he'll surely pay with his hide. The only thing that can save him is a king's ransom, or maybe a gangster's fortune. I'm telling you guys, this is Star Wars meets Ocean's 11. It's pretty awesome. Check it out. Scoundrel Star Wars, available on audible.com. Go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. So another big thing at CES this year, of course, is 4K televisions. And we don't need to talk about it for too long, but I just want to get your guys' take on... We had a user-submitted question this week that was sent in one of our pre-show video questions asking about our opinions on 4K. So are you guys excited about 4K? There was a lot of discussion last week in the talk back on Shaq News that, you know, it's still a ways off and that they doubt these next consoles are going to take advantage of that. So what do you guys think? Are you excited for that? Do you want it?
I I will go ahead and admit right now that I'm a little bit ignorant on the tech to have a fully formulated opinion about whether
it's higher resolution, more density of pixels.
Yeah, that's all good.
He's asking if you had a standard def TV, are you excited about HD TV?
Well, right. Yeah.
Well, Dan, do you think it's that big of a change?
Well, I mean, it's
that noticeable.
I mean, that's like, yeah, I think it's a change between going from DVD to Blu-ray.
Right.
Which
everybody said, it's not as big a deal.
But it is. It is. Yeah. And I think it's extremely noticeable when you watch things next to each other. And it's maybe
as everyone does.
Right. We've all got that set up. And maybe harder to tell just from, because you feel like when you go and see something in 4K, you're like, oh my God, it looks amazing. But then you can walk in the next room and, or you know, see something from a blank slate and think, oh, that looks amazing. And it's on Blu-ray or whatever. I don't know what the catch is. Why would we not be excited for 4K?
Well, just
other than having to buy new stuff, but it's not. It's
buy new stuff
like
and
HDTV. Yeah, when HDTV came out, no one bought it other than millionaires. And then it's in 10 years, we will all have it. And you know,
yeah. And the original plasmas had a lot of issues with burn-in, which obviously doesn't happen anymore. But I'm sure 4K will have technical issues that will need to be ironed out in the beginning as well.
Plus, I think everybody's big argument with the new consoles is, well, you know, stuff isn't even at 1080p right now. Are they going to be able to push that kind of data?
It ups all of that's anti with video games. I even think for the only bummer is for TV, and it's now, I'm sure you guys have noticed in watching some HD stuff, in reality you're seeing blemishes, you're seeing things that and this is now we're getting hyper clear, and so it raises those issues that isn't really a consumer problem.
Rhinoplasty is going to go through the roof.
Yeah, we just have to get
rid of Croft's blemishes.
No more human actors, right? I mean, that's the obvious next step.
But it's interesting that video games now cost more because graphics have to be...
Yeah. I mean, games now are probably, you know, aren't native at 1080p, let's say, because it would cost a certain amount of money to make the textures or to make the processing work a certain way. I mean, I'm ignorant to the technical aspects of creating games, but let's say that that's the case. If you then increase the technical limitations even further, and you have to imagine someone like Sony, who is a hardware manufacturer of televisions and are probably at CES right now pushing 4K TVs, would want to add that technology to their next existing platform.
Yeah. Well, I think the bigger problem than sort of the money it costs, which is not insignificant, but is, hey, we're all excited about these new pieces of hardware. They're going to allow developers to go in these new interesting places because it has so much more power. Actually, we're going to use that to have higher resolution. It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah. So AI is still not working on that, huh? Yep.
That guy's still walking in front of that wall.
Streaming, right. Streaming levels still.
That guy's still okay. Ignoring that dead body he found 5 minutes ago.
No.
Boy, they're photorealistic, though.
They really are high res. Like,
wow. It's a really uncanny valley where they're just so dumb.
That's the best looking idiot I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, if you guys are – it was news to me that most things aren't 1080p. But if anything, this would push that to happen. Mm-hmm. So we have that at least. Like, anytime something new that comes through like this, it's going to push the lower end higher, you know? So yeah. This is going to raise our lowest bar.
Right.
It's true. But it also takes out, I think you guys have had this conversation too in the past, where it further puts a gap between high quality AAA studios and studios that really can't hit that bar. And that whole mid-tier of games in this generation sort of disappeared. I mean, if you look at THQ, for example, they've had some big hits, but a game like Darksiders 2, which some people love, doesn't sell very well, but because it only sold 1.5 million copies, that wasn't good enough for that company because it costs so much more to make these games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that becomes a big issue. And THQ is suffering hardcore because of that and because of other things that have happened with them, but that's obviously a problem.
All right, let's transition into some stuff we've been playing this week. Jeff, tell me about Kentucky Route Zero, because I saw that video of that game, and it looks badass.
Yeah, it is. Excuse me. It is badass. It is now. Have you guys played any other either stuff by Cardboard Computer or Jake Elliott?
I believe so. Didn't you make me play one?
I did. Well, okay, so.
What was that game?
There was one that was an experimental one that he didn't really dig. It was really just like a side project that he had done.
Right. It was like wandering sort of around like...
Yeah, you're a dog wandering through a crazy forest. It's like chasing... Yeah, anyway. So this...
What was that called?
Ruins. And that's free. There's also another free one that Cardboard Computer did called House in California. And it's basically a really minimalistic 2D point-and-click adventure game, but... In a house in California, the verbs are all really, really atypical. So they're like...
They're all like, dude.
Well, they're... I know. Sorry. Was I saying like a lot?
I'm saying a house in California would have that. House in California.
Yeah.
These are iOS or
No,
PC?
this is PC.
Okay.
These are both free. House in California is their first paid release. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a five-chapter... or five act, I guess, thing. The first act just came out. You can buy them individually for $7.
You mean Kentucky Route Zero, not House of California?
Correct. Okay. Oh, did I say?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
It's funny how they're not saying episodic gaming. Like, that phrase is kind of off the table nowadays.
It's a game-isode.
It's a game-isode.
Well, I think that the question there is whether or not, if you say episodic, it infers this idea that they connect, like the choices you make in the first one will...
Well, Act 5 doesn't connect with Act 1?
Well, I mean, story-wise, but I mean actual decisions you make, like Walking Dead, for example. Like, those are episodes because they connect with what had happened previously in your own decision-making.
Really, episodic traditionally implies the opposite.
Right.
Right.
Right. Oh, well, I guess like now
Alex
in the
P.
game.
King doesn't remember what he did last time.
You know what, though? But you think of Star Wars as an episode. Like... We've used that term in so many ways.
I think you're thinking of like that series has episodes, but I mean like that episodic nature of games now, at least in the last year.
Just say
year,
it sounds really
changed.
Weird. Episode. Episode.
Row-ad.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so five acts.
So five acts. First act is out. And I think if you buy them all at once, it's like you save $10 and you get the soundtrack for free, which is pretty cool. And it is also a point-and-click adventure game, but the way that it's set up, the art's really the art style kind of reminds me of it's like out of this world, you know, ish.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely like, looks like that.
It's got this really cool, like,
Yeah, and the camera angle will, like, shift, like, out of this world used to.
Yeah, they do some, like, rotoscoping type stuff where, like, perspective will change and the characters will be in the center of the screen and things will rotate around. Yeah, it's – so it's the camera work and how things – the foreground and the background, it's really beautiful
to look at.
The gameplay itself is – it's more like sort of helping to author a very poetic sort of story. So for example, the very first decision or thing you get to do in the game is, you know, you run into this gas station and you're talking to this guy and you have a dog with you, and it says, oh, what's your dog's name? And the first choice is, oh, you know, my dog's name is, I don't remember this exactly, but it's, my dog's name is Beauregard. He's a good dog. The second choice is, oh, her name's Blue. She's like a real good. And then the third choice is something completely different, but you're basically determined.
The third gender?
Well, or whatever. You say some random thing. It's usually three choices that they give you. And
but like based on the choice, it will actually be like, okay, now your dog is female.
Yes. And it flavors the narrative. So you're basically participating in the story. You're not actually, from what I can tell, you're not actually, you know, influencing events to any large degree. But you are sort of putting your personal stamp on how the
narrative. It's like Mad Libs.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that does sound fun.
Well, yes, sort of. It's a little more like, I mean, yeah, it's more poetic than Mad Libs is.
You don't know my Mad Libs.
A noun. You mean about perpetude.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, it's a very, very sort of, it's not entirely unique because some of his other games do similar things, but I really click with his writing style. It's very minimalistic. I mean, they call it a magical realist adventure is sort of the descriptor that they give it. So it is grounded in the real world. The overall storyline of the game has to do with Kentucky Route Zero is basically this underground highway that runs underneath Kentucky that these four travelers find themselves, you know, together and traveling and exploring and all that sort of stuff. And so it's sort of like an adventure game, but it's, you know, right from the get-go, they start doing some really clever, like it feels realistic, the story, the setting, everything feels realistic, and then they'll throw this little subtle sort of mystical thing at you, and you'll be like, you know, sort of leave it up to you to interpret it almost. Or depending on your decision, you can sort of go, oh, this can be explained rationally or this can't be explained rationally. So you're – anyway, I'm sort of making a mess of it, but describing it because it's
that
hard
Mad Libs
to – it's hard
thing
to,
didn't help, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's hard to talk about without – you know, because the whole thing is about experiencing this story, and it's hard to say, you know.
Well, by contrast, then, how about, because I know you've been playing Resonance, too.
Yeah.
So, by contrast, because that's another indie adventure game that's come out in the last little while. Mm-hmm. That came out last year.
Yeah.
How does that compare, do you think?
Well, Resonance is, and we can talk about that more later, because that's also an excellent game, but that is more of a traditional point-and-click adventure game that has then layered on all these new and unique mechanics and ways of dealing with the you know, process of interacting with that type of game. This is more like, you know, every time, everything you do in the game other than clicking to move around and examine stuff and talk to people is making those conversation choices. And you really are authoring your own story. There is no – I haven't come across any puzzles to solve per se. I mean, there are certain things you need to interact with to move the story forward, but it's not like they hide those from you. It's not about like, how do I figure this out? Or, you know, they don't throw any Twitch action sequences at you. It's really just about, you know, helping to author this really cool sort of
– right.
You know, story.
I don't know if you – I just dropped my pencil. I don't know if you want to just get right into Resonance, which is
sure,
a game
go for
we've
it.
Both been playing. I don't know if you've played it at all.
It's no.
Who's the developer of Resonance?
Well, Wajidai published.
Oh, Wajidai published it, yeah. Wajidai are the guys that do the Humble Indie Bundle. They sort of started that. They're the company that organizes that. And
yeah,
Resonance –
Dave Gilbert's company, I think, is
And Resonance is – this adventure game that came out last year that it takes place during this like catastrophic event where this laboratory explodes, and then you sort of are replaying the events that lead up to this, and you play as four different characters. And the interesting thing about it is eventually what happens is all these characters intersect and you sort of learn about their histories, and then they sort of come together and you sort of see how they work together. So an example of it is there is a guy who works at the laboratory who the game starts off where he is awoken out of bed, and then he goes to the laboratory because his boss is kind of freaking out. Goes to the laboratory. The laboratory has been destroyed. And this police officer that you play in a previous chapter in the game kind of comes into that that area as well. And then you start playing as both of them. And then they can work together to solve puzzles. And it has a really interesting like dialogues tree situation.
Yeah, there's a couple of structural things that I think are really, really interesting that they do. They basically for lack of a word or a better word, it's broken into chapters again. But each chapter, so you're confronted with sort of a four-panel still, and each you know quadrant of the screen has a different picture in it. And you can basically pick, and each one of those pictures represents a segment of the game or a little mini chapter within that larger chapter. And so you can play those in any order that you want, which is cool. So you're not like forced to go through the same path every time. The other thing that's really neat is it introduces the concept of short-term memory and long-term memory for your characters. So if you're in a puzzle or if you're in a room and there are objects and stuff all around, you can basically take things and click and drag them into your short-term memory and then use them as conversation options with other characters later.
That's wow. Interesting.
And combine them. So it's really, really clever. Like it's one of those things where you're like, wow, this makes so much sense. Why didn't anybody do this
before?
Yeah.
What kind of game is it?
It's an adventure point and click game.
Point and click.
So a good example of it is like if you are playing a section where you need to turn a valve to turn off some water, there's this part in the game that there's like this water that's blocking your way.
Which, by the way, I've never done in real life. Ever.
No.
But I've done it 1,000 times in video games. Like,
well, don't you feel that you're better prepared for it at this point, though?
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
So I think that maybe you'll be okay. But in this particular instance, one of the characters is like this weak, scrawny guy, and he can't muster up the power to do it. But if you put that the valve, you click on it and put it in your short-term memory, you can then bring it to the other character, the police officer, who's this big, burly guy, and ask him, okay, here's the valve. I remember this valve. Can you go and take care of this for me? And it's sort of these like you're playing with the world and you keep changing the things that are sort of on the tip of the tongue of the character you're playing as. And you interact with the other player that you actually control as well. And they're talking to each other, but you're controlling both. It's very strange, but it's a very, very cool concept. And kind of there's one particular character who keeps having dream sequences about when she was a child and she's being chased by a monster. And it's like pretty scary stuff. Like small kid, there's a room that's like a door that's being banged on by this snarling monster. Like you don't know exactly what's going on and you're trying to escape frantically before it comes and grabs you. So it's really intense and it's a really amazing looking game. It's an old style, kind of looks like old Monkey Island style.
And it's fully voiced too, which you wouldn't expect from something like that. I mean, they do have characters will have thought bubbles aside, which are not voiced, but like every piece of dialogue, conversationals and stuff is all.
And it's not it's not like Monkey Island where it's like the whole chicken and wheel situation. Like you don't it's not wacky things that you're putting together to make things that don't make sense. Like there's an instance when you play as the police officer where you're trying to look at see where this guy is going. He's going into an alleyway and you want to see where exactly the door in the alleyway he's going into. So you grab a newspaper, you buy a newspaper, and then you grab a mirror off of a car and tear the actual mirror off of it and put it in the newspaper and sit on a bench and wait for him to walk behind you so you can watch it.
That's cool.
And it's like using these real world pieces and you're like, oh, I wonder if I put these things together, how will they interact? And so there's not a lot of puzzle solving in that sense. It's just like, how do you use the world to your advantage to try to get the perspective?
Right. You're not throwing, I mean, there are inventory items, but you're not just like, you know.
Does the thread work?
Yeah.
Does the chewing gum work?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's not like, well, and that's the other thing too, is your short-term memory and long-term memory have limited number of slots. Right. So you can't – it's not like you can go into every room and just go, okay, let me pull every object into my short-term memory. It's like, okay, which things should I really focus on and like what am I going to need to
use? Does that mean there's a lot of backtracking when it's like, ah, I should have remembered that other thing?
Not really because you can't really progress without actually – I mean the sections, these like little levels are so tiny and enclosed that you're doing everything in this one little area and then that – chapter closes and then you select another one in the another quadrant for that chapter and you play as a different character and you see a different area and it's really enclosed. It's sort of a walled garden in that sense, but it's cool. I mean, and it gives you like very subtle hints, like you can click on the newspaper stand that's just sort of in the background and it says it costs $3 and then you go into your inventory and say, oh, I have a wallet. I wonder if I have money in the wallet. And then you're just like using these pieces to try to you know, progress through the story. It's really
interesting. It eliminates that annoying trial and error stuff that's so prevalent in so many other games like that, that are like, well, you know, what three wacky things that wouldn't normally go together can we, you know, turn
that
into
sounds
a puzzle?
Right. It really sounds like there's this renaissance of point-and-click adventure games.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
That's very exciting. I mean, so yeah, either of these two, Kentucky Route Zero or Resonance, highly recommend.
Is Resonance PC or?
PC.
PC. Yeah.
I think it's PC Mac. Yeah.
Yeah. I picked it up on the Steam sale, but they can buy it off the website. You can get it off Steam.
Old games too.
I'm pretty sure Kentucky Route Zero at the moment is only available through the developer's website, but I think that may change in the near future.
Super cool.
So, yeah.
Dan, I happen to know you're playing Terra because I'm playing it with you. and people, you know, faithful listeners of this show have heard me rant and rave about my love affair with that game recently. We played it when it first came out, and then we're back playing it again.
And, dude, I might actually play it soon, too.
I'm downloading it right now.
Well, the big news of the week, of course, it's gone free to play.
Hell yeah.
So, we can talk a little bit about that as well, but I want you to explain why you love it. It's a lot of the same reasons I love it, I know, because we've had these conversations.
Well,
but
really what it is I think we, you and I and the other guys that we play with, are confounded by anyone who isn't playing it and doesn't love it. Like, just in terms of, at least in comparison to other MMOs. It's not the MMO that's going to make, although it could, because the combat's a little bit more skill-based, and that could be off-putting to people to even pick up an MMO, the combat in other MMOs.
I think it's more accessible as combat.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh.
I'm saying that's the one thing that makes it more accessible.
Ah.
Nothing else in the game makes it more accessible if you already aren't the kind of guy to play an MMO. But if
it's
you play...
It's kind of grindy, too.
I don't think it's grindy at all. I would call it the opposite.
Well.
Just in terms of the fact that we talk about this all the time, but just in terms of the fact that there's so many quests, there's so many areas, you don't have to do the same quest over and over in any specific area just to see the next place. You could just keep on trucking, and you actually need to miss half the content. I mean, it's impossible to play all the content in every area, or you will miss something. You have
to
skip
out-level every area.
Right, exactly.
But
so
to play the counter argument to it, while that
rote
is true,
tasks.
it is
sure.
Kill six of those, kill 10 of these, and it's
That's
always
true.
That.
That's true.
Yeah. But it does streamline that process, because you just walk around and look at the things that have exclamation points over them to indicate that they are the thing you kill for the quest.
Right. It is not a revolutionary MMO.
Sure.
And removing that stuff would be, and we all look forward to that.
Yeah.
100%. However, within the confines of a lot of the tropes of MMO, this does so many of them so much better. And graphically, it's astounding. It looks like a traditional RPG. It looks like Skyrim or whatever, and, you know, but it's an MMO. And like, usually an MMO, you have to say the graphics are really good for an MMO.
Yeah.
But not just that, the graphic style, the look of this game, every area is so unique for an MMO, and then also period, you know, and it's some of it I would have thought I would have been off put by it, because it has that very Japanese Final Fantasy, like, what sense? This doesn't make any sense.
It also doesn't.
What genre am I looking at here?
It doesn't have at all a cohesive design sense. Like, there's a jungle butted up next to a you know, sci-fi area.
Yeah, there's
like
holograms now in my fantasy setting. But in a traditional RPG, that would make me put down my control. That's what I do find off-putting in a Final Fantasy kind of game. However, in an MMO where you just want to see something different, you know, the aesthetics are so powerful because you stare at the same ones for so long, that the fact that they do that, the fact that the game offers so much in that area, is wonderful. And the aesthetics of your design is always exciting, that your character's design, the races that you play are unique to any other, so it's not just orc, elf, ogre, what have you. It's all very cool. And the skill-based combat, though I look forward to the day where combat is even more skill-based in MMO, it makes the carrot on the stick isn't just loot, it's gameplay. It's when I go to bed at night and I'm thinking about, I can't wait to play Terra again tomorrow, it's because I want to do better at it. Kind of like when you're playing Call of Duty, any multiplayer first-person shooter, where I want to do that better. Now, it could be stronger in that area.
Sure.
Like, I still want an MMO that really is... I mean, my thoughts on MMOs in general...
We're gonna talk about that in a second.
Yeah. So, yes, Terra is phenomenal. There are experiences in some of the dungeon areas where... Jeff and I met each other playing Dungeons & Dragons, and the thing that I always longed for when we played traditional pen and paper Dungeons & Dragons is, I don't want to just role play combat and then story. I want I want to solve riddles and puzzles as if I really was an adventurer on this quest. And the dungeons in Terra actually do bring some of that to the table. We have to problem solve. There's a room... We just played last night without Jeff, unfortunately, where there's these bone imps that you keep on killing them. They respawn, and there's no killing them. You have to actually run through the room and not touch one of them.
Oh.
And there's another room where there's spikes in the room, and there's a golem in the corner. And if you figure it out, you can shoot the golem in the corner, who isn't really the enemy. He's just like chilling in the corner. If you shoot the golem in the corner, the spikes go off. So you can actually use those spikes going off to kill.
Oh, that's pretty
like
rad.
You have oh, to wow. use strategic. That isn't just spamming 1, 2, 3 and big boss comes and dodges attack and spam 1, 2, 3. And then there's so much. I'm a healer in the game and I am constantly making decisions. I'm not just going through my, what's the term that we always use? No. But in terms of, in combat,
your progression,
what do you call it? What's the term we always use in MMOs? You go through your rotation.
Oh, rotation.
I'm not just going through my rotation. I'm constantly managing this skill does this much damage, but then I have to revive this person. And if I use that, that's going to use up this much MP. And then if I use this skill here and that, I'm constantly, and as a Jeff's a damage dealer, but he's constantly got to manage. If I leap here, I will do that. And that, there's so much going on.
Yeah. And I think people who've played WoW will say, well, you know, in crazy boss battles in, you know, end game stuff, you have all these weird puzzles that you need to figure out. You need to do the safety dance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And yes, that is the case. But inside that, I mean, maybe you can relay the story the other night. You know, there was this moment where the boss was like leaping over people's heads. And because it's an action based game,
right,
we are dodging, we are leaping, we are running. You know, Dan is trying to res someone in the corner and another person was trying to kite the boss, which you do in WoW. Mm-hmm. But there's this action element where you really are, if you swing and he's not where he's supposed to be, you miss him. In WoW, if you have him targeted and you do your thing, right, you hit him. Yeah. You know, it really adds an element.
It's not just creating a plan and exacting that plan. It's you can screw up based on your actual technical agility.
Yeah.
And that the intensity that brings mm-hmm. to the gameplay when everyone else is counting on you and all right. that stuff, which can happen, but in your rotation in another MMO, not in your actual dexterity, you know, holding a controller playing a combat game.
So it was like the combat more active like DCUO was, like where you need to be in the zone and
it plays like Dan and I are both playing it with a controller.
Oh, okay, wow.
And it plays, and it's designed to
Jeff's
be like
character's
that.
Like playing God of War, you know?
Yeah, I'm playing a Berserker.
A little more, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly...
Not exactly, but closer to that
certainly,
than we've ever had before.
So how do they translate, like, hotbar stuff to the...
Is it, like, triggers, and then it changes
uh-huh.
your... Okay,
yep, you
just
have
like DCUO was. Yeah.
Exactly like DCUO was.
I love DCUO.
And it... But it's more so in the sense that, you know, you're doing combos now, and there was a little of that in DCUO, but now like one action will chain into another action, which will chain into a third action, and there's charging attacks, and it really feels like my character's melee. I have in a melee action game like God of War, I have a big right. axe and I'm swinging and smacking people, and if they and oftentimes they will leap to the side and I'll miss them, and then I'll have to run around, and it's much more active that way.
That's I see the draw, like I because Joystick, we don't really cover a lot of MMOs. We have a sister site that does all the MMO stuff, so I don't really pay attention to it all that much, and I didn't really get what it was about Terra that kind of drew you in, because as even when you were saying, the quest stuff is essentially typical to other MMOs where you do have to go and kill things, but the gameplay of doing that is what keeps bringing you guys
yes.
back in.
There's no negative. All the negatives that are in MMOs are there. All the negatives of Terra are in other MMOs. That's the thing that gets me is, yes, we can list the things that we don't love about Terra, but all of those are present in other MMOs.
Right.
Terra brings some other things to the table that are truly special. And you can't, the thing that everyone wants in an MMO is you get to a new area and you look around and you're like, oh, I mean, that is the joy of an MMO. It's like, whoa. And boy, is that ever present in Terra, more so than any other game. It's just incredible.
Yeah. It's exciting to get to a new area because you get to see this cool new design. The graphics are amazing. It's Unreal Engine, but it's design too. And the enemy design is so interesting.
That's the thing. Yes.
And because it's this is another big point that I've never mentioned on the show, which I had been meaning to. Because the game is an action-based game, what you're doing instead of watching cooldowns is you're watching the enemy, because they will flash, they will have tells, they will have certain actions that they do right before they attack you.
You got to learn him.
Dan was always going, learn him! just like you would when you're playing God of War or some other game, when an enemy, you know, his eyes flash or he starts winding up for a big swing, you got to get out of the way or block or whatever
When Mike Tyson winks at you, man, you better jump out of the way.
Mechanic. Yeah.
So you're watching the screen, you're watching the gorgeous graphics rather than watching your stupid icons tick down, and all of these enemy character designs are so interesting and so different from anything I've ever seen in any kind of fiction. Like you're finding these like bizarre jester characters and weird like mashups of different kinds of things.
You remember the trailer for the sequel to Clash of the Titans. Forget what it was called. But the trailer was amazing, where it had the like meteor thing would land down and the guy had like another bad guy with knives on his back and he was spinning around. And you're like, what? That is so cool looking. That's like the enemies. And every enemy's like, oh my God, that guy's doing a crazy thing. That's so cool. Yeah. You know?
And then you're dead because you're just like, oh my God, I dropped my controller.
And BAMs. I'm sure you brought that up.
I have, but go ahead.
No, I mean, just
it basically means that you get to fight boss monsters while not being in a dungeon. You can choose to fight them at any time. It's almost like Bioshock. It's like there's these big ass monsters that are wandering around.
Oh, okay. Like the Big Daddies,
like, right.
Roaming around. Okay,
they're hard. They usually take at least two or three people to take down. And you'll get a quest to take them down and usually have huge XP rewards. Mm-hmm. But they're like, you know, 5-man mini boss battles that you could just do whenever you want. You don't have to like go into an instance to do them.
Oh, is the world instance like the original Guild Wars was?
Yes, it's sharded and it's like you're in a one channel or in another channel and in each area that you go into, you have a loading, you go through a portal to get to major hubs. It's not truly streaming like WoW is.
Yeah. Well, the only, because I was just wondering whether or not it scales to the party that you have. Like if it's just me by myself, it's like those guys are super difficult.
You by yourself, you'll die. You with another person, you might pull it off. You with a third person, you should be able to pull off. But if you get a fourth person, it's going to be even easier for you. You know, like that's what it is.
So I mean, I think the question is now, because it's becoming free to play, you guys are playing it right now and presumably still paying for it because hasn't gone free to play just yet.
Right.
And it's you too. And Alex, I guess, is playing with you guys too. Do you think that like going free to play is going to change any of that stuff? Where
I think it's
going to
enhance. I am excited.
I think the player population is going to skyrocket.
Right.
Do you guys ever end up playing with people that aren't in your own group? Or?
I do. I do quite a bit when I'm leveling by myself. I'll find someone. There's a BAM and they've got the quest too. So cool. Let's go do it. But really what's great too is we're in areas now because we're closer to the end game where there's only one channel.
Yeah.
And if there's more people, there will be multiple channels, which is great because we're playing on a PvP server, if someone's hassling us, we can just switch channels. Mm-hmm. When you're looting stuff or doing like mining or all that kind of thing, you can just switch a channel and it pops. I mean, this is all like I'm scheming the game. But I just think having more people playing.
Your account's gonna be a band after
this. No. I think having more people makes all that stuff easier. It doesn't make it harder. I mean, matching up for an instance is going to go way quicker.
Sure. Yeah,
you know, I don't think there's any detriment to having other people. We become founders for having already been playing the game.
Yeah.
So we get some bonuses for that. And the free to play thing isn't limiting us in any way for having already been playing the game. It's not taking anything out of the game experience. And when you play free to play, it's going to be the same experience that we have been having all this time. However, there are some additional content that you can experience by paying for the game.
I just hope that it's not the beginning of the end. for the game. I hope it's more like Lotro, where it's like, oh, it's breathing new life into this game that deserves more people to take a look at.
Sometimes that signals bad things are happening.
And I really wasn't – I mean, I'm not a huge MMO guy, but I really wasn't a fan of what they did with Star Wars The Old Republic when they took that free-to-play.
Yeah.
And that the whole it just seemed like they fundamentally changed the game, you know, and how leveling and all that stuff worked. And that kind of stuff rubs me the wrong way. It'll be interesting to see how they sort of – you know, handle that.
Well, the cool thing about Terra is it may have something to do with the fact that it's a Korean game originally, but it feels like it was built for microtransactions already because so much of the game is just ready for cosmetic enhancements. It's like, it's all, I mean, a lot of the knock on the game is it's a lot of sexy characters, which is, and they'll sell you bikinis and shit like that. But also,
oh, that's terrible.
It looks
terrible.
So great. But it looks so great. Like, Dan bought the freaking lioness mount because it's awesome looking. Mm-hmm. And I just got a new set of armor that looks freaking rad. And they have the potential to just add amazing looking things that if they sell it cheap enough, I'll fucking buy that shit. I'm sad, but it's true. I will.
The difference is normally we see microtransactions in iOS games where a lot of times they're cleverly done 8-bit graphics. And so great, I can put a hat on my hook champ guy. It's like, who cares? It looks like the same pixel that the other pixel
looks
like.
It's just a slightly redder pixel.
Yeah.
It's an orange
pixel.
But
it's like, but this game, I'm staring at the same thing for hours. All I want is the joy of seeing something else that, you know, so yes, I will pay for the other map. Like that it entices you to, you want that. You know?
I have this vision of like me and Jeff jump into it and meet up with you guys on there. And it's like the golden mounts and my armor.
And we're like, sitting there in rags.
That's true.
I'm wearing like a bathing suit and some shades.
Like, there's
and,
like flies coming off of our avatars. Cause we're just peasants in the world.
No, I got to say, it's pretty cool right off the bat. You're like, this is already cool looking. I'm already, how is it going to get cooler looking?
Is it rewarding enough that you can, you know, through questing or whatever, get gear that's pretty awesome?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it pretty
so
much
so far, but we've been paying for it. I mean, I don't know what they
No, you haven't been
like
paying.
It.
Oh, you mean when it goes free to play?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean like, I mean,
well, here's the thing. Here's the thing that is diabolical about it.
Okay.
There are no helmets, no helms in this game. That's not a piece of gear that you get. But there is a cosmetic headpiece slot. And like during Christmas, they had like Santa hats.
What? Oh, I wish you could
monsters.
See Zav's face.
Right?
He processed it and he just...
Yeah. he understood the ramifications.
Yeah, he did. He really did.
Like during Christmas, you get like Santa hats and like reindeer ears and shit. But now it's going to be like, do you want the fucking demon head that's going to be amazing?
Do you
about
want the propeller?
$2.99?
That already exists. Beanie, you can buy a cool
demon head.
Yeah, you really can. I'm not kidding. It's pretty rad. I don't have it.
I've seen the guy with the wolf.
I don't have it yet. I got to go home and...
No, I have a warrior character that I haven't been playing and they just came out with cool Bruce Lee Game of Death style jumpsuits.
Oh my God.
And it doesn't make sense to my priest, but... Holy, my warrior would look really cool in that yellow.
Okay, wait.
I gotta attach the lore to his dress.
I have to.
That's the thing that they don't give a shit about lore in Terra. They really don't.
I seriously have to put the brakes on this for a second and just mention that it fucking feels like we're like a bunch of little girls sitting around talking about our Barbies right now.
Dude, you are not kidding.
No,
that is so true.
Yeah.
And I am embarrassed, and yet a guy looks rad. All right, we're gonna try to regain any sense of dignity we had. I know people complain about us talking about MMOs, but when we get back, I want to read some of the feedback that we got last week and talk about this question that I have been obsessed with. Dan knows this. Every car ride we go on, I talk about it. What to do about MMOs going forward? What's the next step? So stick around for that. We will get back to other non-MMO topics as well, I promise. See you in a sec. Epic.
Amazing.
Micah in the booth pointing out that in Terra, jump is a very important activity for you to do. Characters jump. This comment was written in the talk back to last week's episode at shacknews.com from Cats Akimbo. And his idea for what a next-gen MMO would be. I thought it was pretty interesting. He said, much like Terra, you have to get away from cooldowns. We've already covered that. But get this. Next, get rid of quests as we know them. Instead, make everything you do part of a quote-unquote quest. Like in Call of Duty, keep track of which monsters you kill, what weapons you use, assists, how you finish off an enemy, what skills you use, etc. Keep track of every frickin' thing possible and give the player an XP bump when they reach milestones and an item on the big milestones that relates to the thing that they were doing. The idea is that players won't possibly complete everything unless they're crazy, but they'll do what they love to do and get rewarded for it. He also says make exploration driving part of the game. Make it linear, but a wide world where you can roam around and get through how you want, but pushing forward to see how far you can get is the driving factor. He also talks about looping, going prestige and looping, which I don't really agree with, so I'm going to skip that part. But I think that's really interesting. I mean, in a lot of ways, Guild Wars 2 tried to do that in the sense that there's no – you don't ever have to search for a dude to turn in a quest. But – What do you guys think of this idea? I mean, maybe not even restricting to MMOs, but just RPGs in general. What about the idea of not making it? I'm your taskmaster.
Well, what does the average player do when they enter a big, you know, open world like that, and there's no quest marker, and they're like, oh shit, what am I supposed to do now?
They need guidance is what you're saying?
Well, maybe a little bit or maybe some sort of structure. Maybe, I mean, because I agree with the concept of, you know, the quest hub thing's a little, it's immersion breaking. It's kind of, you know, been there, done that.
He's sort of describing what Skyrim does. I mean, Skyrim
get quests in Skyrim though.
Right, but I mean, you only get those quests if you go and interact with people in the world. Like, if you find a town and start talking to the people, then you'll learn things about the world that then you can go out and do.
Right.
Whereas if you go in there and never talk to anyone, there's no exclamation point above someone's head that tells you, like, hey, this is the person you need to talk to tell you to do something. Mm-hmm. I feel like you get rewarded by discovering new areas and your map grows.
Yeah.
There's huge, you know, things that you can explore, and there's caves, and there's all these other different things that you can do. I feel like that is sort of the Elder Scrolls MMO that people wanted, and what they're kind of offering is, you know, their variation of World of Warcraft with some changes. But I mean, I feel like that's sort of what Skyrim does really well.
I think I will take this question from the opposite end of the spectrum, which is I don't think we will have MMOs. I feel like,
because we'll all be jars.
We're all going to be avatars. I'm just going to go in my booth and my guys, the world is an MMO. No, I think that just like what happened with co-op, once we had co-op in a game, every shooter that comes out, it has co-op. It's easy to include, and it feels like if it's not there, it's meaningless. And all it does is enhance the experience to be able to do the same thing with a buddy. And I feel like in the future, every RPG that comes out is going to be an MMO. There will be a way in which these things are able to be connected because of our faster things, mm-hmm. technology, processing, internet, all that stuff. When I play Kingdoms of Amalur, which is a game that I loved, or Skyrim, and the quest givers and all the those will be like the NPCs in an MMO. And you're playing Skyrim at home, I'm playing it. What reason is there for that? All that stuff to not be connected, and for us to not play things that way, other than technical limitations. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I certainly don't want to discount single player games, because I think part of the joy I have with Elder Scrolls, like Skyrim, for example, is my guy is the guy. But when you blow it out into an entire
narcissist,
exactly. Well, yeah, we've met. So
ego quest.
I mean, like, my guy is the Dragonborn, and I'm the one who's going to save the world. And I think a game like Star Wars: The Old Republic, the problem there was that they try to, you know, craft the story behind your person, but it's still this huge world where there are a million other people who are also the person who is supposed to save the universe.
But theoretically, right? you're sort of mainly interacting with your buddies, and if you, like, you're the Dragonborn,
But there may be another race that is the Orcborn, and there's, you know, I am the master thief, and I come from, like, those games like Amalur or even Star Wars, where the different classes have their different lore, and you represent this part. I was a scoundrel in Star Wars, so I had this epic quest where I had to, in Old Republic, I mean, and I had to get back something that was stolen, a treasure for someone or what have you, and that I was the guy in that story. I know there will be other scoundrels and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
I know
I think implications. Sort of, but what I would love to happen is sort of what happened. I don't know where we're supposed to hit that at this point. What I would love to see happen in single-player games is maybe not blow it out so much that like everyone is now involved in my quest, but I would like to see something like Zombie U did it and Dark Souls did it and Persona 4 Golden does this, where you are walking through the world and then someone is also playing the game at the same time and they can leave a note, or you can see, you know, fragments or...
New Super Mario Brothers U.
Or, I don't know, what is that? Is
New
that
Super dude? Mario Brothers U has that kind of...
Oh, well,
almost.
Yeah, sure, I guess. But I mean, like, in Zombie U, if you die and I'm playing at the same time as you, now you appear in my game as a zombie.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Or in Persona 4, if I don't know what to do, I can just check, you know, the bulletin board for that area, and and people leave notes about what you can do. Or Dark Souls, people leave notes of what's happening
or
in the world.
Not just that. In Dark Souls, I never played this part of the game, but isn't there, like, invasions?
Yeah.
Where you invade someone else's world, and there's, like, massive,
I think,
like,
you can mess with people. I'm not entirely sure.
No, you can really...
You can call for help, I think. You can come
in
and help.
Demon Souls, it was to a small degree, but I'm pretty sure in Dark Souls, you, like... Well, you definitely can go in and, like, you battle someone. You go into their world, and now you're fighting them.
Oh, I didn't even
But
know
I think there's even massive, like...
20,000 Dark Souls
fans. I've seen Twitters of people
right
talking about it. And,
yeah.
For sure.
I don't want to get too far away, though, from this idea of getting rid of quests, because that's kind of what really sparked my imagination. And I know I keep bringing this up, too, and I keep coming back to it, but this idea of Far Cry 3.
Right.
Where, you know, what if an MMO or just a role-playing game in general, instead of you going to a person who says, I have this problem, yo, can you solve it? Check out the base when my DJ revolves it, and I'll give you a quest reward for that. Instead go, I want this certain thing. You know, like in Far Cry 3, it's, I want a bigger satchel. Mm-hmm. What do I need to do to get that satchel? Well, I need skins from these things. So in a sense, you're going to have to kill 12 of those things anyway, but no one's like, hey, bro, go kill 12 of those things for me for some fucked up reason.
That's sort of akin to, I mean, I think last week I briefly talked about the idea of a Walking Dead feeling MMO, where it's basically, you know, you're in a big open world and there's other people in that world and you have a starting area. But a lot of it is, like, you know, about fortifying your position, figuring out where you are, and then deciding where you're going to go. Like you would
Minecraft or something.
Isn't that DayZ is like that too?
Yeah.
But to have a more, I mean, I also said something about, like, you know, an MMO where combat was not the focus, where you could find something equally compelling.
Well, if Alex Albrecht was here, he would be telling you regaling stories about Star Wars Galaxies, the original Star Wars MMO, and how you could just be a farmer or be a nerf herder. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, you could just do that.
Right, but it wasn't...
And that worked out really
and then
well
you sell
for
things.
Star Wars Galaxies.
But that didn't work for most people, the way that they executed. I'm just saying the concept is solid, but you can't...
I love what you're saying.
You can't be
way.
A dancer and, like, if you don't have anything to do as a dancer, but if you're like, oh, I'm a dancer and now I'm going to go out on the, you know, this dancing circuit tour that spans the nation and, like, go to all these venues, and then all of a sudden you're playing this completely different game from somebody else, and you're like, oh, wow, this is a cool, you know, not that I want to be a dancer. I'm
but it's weird that you went dancer
in an MMO.
Yeah,
it's cool. I mean, I think that I do like the idea of, as the technology evolves, right, like, co-op is a big thing, and, you know, now it's like 4-player co-op, and it's expanding even further than that. I think that's really important. But I do... like single-player games still.
Sure,
and
no,
I
do,
and
too.
And I don't really want to get
too.
Away
I think
from
I'm more saying,
that.
I don't think it's about how do we make MMOs more like, I think it's going to be, the next time someone's making a Skyrim-like game, it doesn't have to be a single-player role-playing game. It can be this massive role-playing game that we're all playing. You know, I don't think it's how do we get from the MMO to making it more like an RPG experience. I feel like it's from, we have the traditional RPG experience and we're just expanding.
Well,
you know, who's included
in it. From a traditional co-op side of things, I mean, how rad would it be to be playing Skyrim, to set up a Skyrim game and go, okay, this Skyrim game, I'm going to play with Dan, Jeff, and Zav. and we start it up, and it's like just like the single player game, and I'm playing it, and maybe I'll run into you in the world at some point. Yeah. Like your games are running sort of in parallel with mine.
Right, right.
And if you complete a quest in my world because we're playing co-op, I go there and they're like, oh yeah, so and so.
I think that's isn't that what Molyneux wanted to do with Fable 3 back in the day?
Dude, but that I mean like yeah. that would still be really
No, I love that awesome. Idea. And it's not it doesn't love even it. Need to be it doesn't even need to it just has to inform my world. It doesn't even have right. to be like
right,
we're on at the same time, and we're partied up, and all.
But
this
we, could.
We could,
we
right.
could, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah.
The other thing that I just kind of want to reiterate my position is that I think that a lot of this is the wow effect, but the whole MMO landscape has been distilled and distilled and distilled down to this very specific formula, and you even see a game like Kingdoms of Amalur, which is a single player game, but it's built on the precepts of MMO, where you walk into a new area, there's quests, you get those, you go kill the things, you come right. back. It's built with that structure that has mm-hmm. been very much solidified. And I think that what's we're dying out for, what we want is kind of blasting that wide open. And instead of going, this guy wants me to do something for him, it's I want to do something for me. So, you know, instead of it being yeah. I'm assigned tasks from these mm-hmm. people, it's I have goals that I want to accomplish in this world, and there's a series of steps that need to be taken for me to achieve that goal. And it's more like what's exciting is the goal rather than what's exciting is just this list of arbitrary quests that we need lore to justify. We need X, Y, Z to justify. Right.
Yeah,
you know,
Far Cry 3 is the perfect summation of your reference to that is that.
Yeah.
If you're going to make me go out and kill 12 deer, it's make it so that it's because I'm hungry and I need or I right. need to travel a certain distance and that's the food supply I need or you know
it's so much more interesting that
ride
way.
A sled of dead deer
like why exactly
I need to travel a long distance I'm gonna yeah. kill 12 deer I don't know why that works.
It worked for Santa yeah.
All right, Dasher's another, delicious
another thing we talked about last week that generated a lot of discussion was our and not even just last week, but we've talked about it all for weeks and weeks, is this comparison of The Walking Dead to Mass Effect. I know, Dan, you're a huge fan of The Walking Dead game. You mentioned it as one of your favorite games of last year. So there's some interesting comments talking about decision, role play when it comes to these types of games. And, you know, I think a lot of us on this show have favored the Walking Dead approach to Mass Effect, and some people took issue with that. Here's an interesting comment from Powell Poplowski.
Nice.
Easy for me to say.
Nicely done.
He said he just finished his playthrough of The Walking Dead, sticking to the this is my story way of playing, and he did not intend to replay it to check other storytelling branches, but he's a curious person, and so he checked walkingdead.wikia.com to find out what he missed. Now, this is going to be some spoilers, so if you have not played Walking Dead,
what's wrong with you?
Be aware yeah. that he's going to talk about some specific things. He said, each time the story branches, it quickly... Oh, he says, guess what? There wasn't much that he missed, mostly just extra dialogue lines. Each time the story branches, it quickly goes back on track. In episode 1, you choose to save Sean and leave Duck to the walkers. Well, we need Duck later on, so no, Duck will live anyway, and Sean will die. In episode 4, Ben is dead, and there is no one to fall into the alleyway, so Kenny can commit zombie suicide. Fear not, Krista will be boxed in the same alleyway trying to retrieve the radio. Kenny will die trying to help her. And then the conversation with the camper stranger near the very end, well, if he didn't sack his wagon in episode 2, it doesn't matter. The reaction is the same. And the ending, well, there's only one, not even in different colors, just one. Does that make Walking Dead less impactful? He says not at all. A few times he was nearly crying, burying the boy who starved to death next to his beloved dog made me almost stop playing. So what's the difference? He says the promise and the context. It's easy to agree with the fact that in the face of the zombie apocalypse, fate is predetermined. Everyone will die and you can just kick and scream in disagreement, but it won't help. This is what you expect from a Walking Dead franchise. But BioWare's marketing created huge expectations, maybe not even consulting the designers, on which they simply couldn't deliver. Additionally, over the course of the adventure, the player is tricked into believing that Shepard can make a difference, hence the disappointment. Now, while he is saying that that's all fine for him, I also take issue that minor variances are somehow unimportant. That
oh, yeah.
I I really was profoundly affected by tiny changes in the storyline and the fact that that was my story. And then when we finally got to the end and the guy kind of recaps your story at the end, like, I made all those decisions. Yes, the story stays on a fairly narrow track, and I only can vary it in the details, but the details were so interesting that it made for a compelling impact on me. I was compelled to feel like I am the main character. So I don't think that that's – I really take issue with people who say that because you couldn't veer the story way off course and end up far afield of another player, that it somehow diminishes the decision-making.
Not only that, I feel like that's measuring the wrong thing. I don't even know if that's true. I feel like we were having a conversation in the car ride over here where you made a decision that was very different than mine, and it did seem to be some major implications because of that different decision. But not just that. Even if his premise is true, even if you can't change the story that much from different kinds of gameplay, the choices that you make are still massive. I mean, even if I decide to not kill someone or kill someone and it won't have an impact on the ending, but the way that it lands on you, whether or not you killed the person or not. We were talking about this in the car. I made a choice to kill somebody, and I was devastated by it, especially when I found out at the end of the game that only 1.9% other players made that same decision. And I was like, I felt
called psychopaths.
I'm an awful human being. But I felt truly awful because of what I did to that character that I felt was necessary at the time. I didn't play that decision because I had already chosen to play a good character and I wanted the XP in the good slot, or a bad character and I'm going to be bad XP, or because I want to unlock a chain in the story that maybe someone else didn't play. The only way I could make that decision at the time was because it's what I felt was the right thing to do.
Okay, you guys both need to play Kentucky Route Zero because I'm not, in all seriousness, because it's not exactly what you're talking about, where it's these huge, like, oh my God, life and death decisions, and you feel that impact. But it does that same thing on a much more subtle level, where the decisions you're making are flavoring your own story, so that you have a very sort of personal connection to the narrative that it's telling.
Right. And I think that that's the key where it comes to Walking Dead. It's like you make those decisions so they become personal decisions of yours. So whether or not the ending is going to be the same for everyone, that doesn't really matter, because what the decisions you're making in the moment change the interaction between you and the other players. And it changes sort of the perception of you as a person. Like, the difference, I think, between Shepard and Lee is that Lee is not a blank slate, whereas Shepard is this blank slate that you then have to craft into a person. And I think the first Mass Effect did a better job of it because you had to make decisions where someone would live or die. And there were epic things like that. Whereas as the game and the series progressed, it became easier to be like, okay, if you're a good player, then these are the good decisions. And if you're a bad player, these are the bad decisions. The difference between the two storytelling, the storytelling in both of those games, is that in Walking Dead, it's a lot grayer in that respect. I mean, and it's purposefully like that because, I mean, Walking Dead in general is like Lord of the Flies. It's not even about the zombies. It's about how these people are going to work as a group together when there are no outside influences.
Right.
And that is just sort of the place that they're in. I think the marketing thing with Mass Effect actually is a major issue, because it was sold as like, you will craft the story that you want. But what really needs to happen in any game, in any narrative, is that it's like a diamond. Like, everything expands out, but eventually it comes back to a head where you need to tell this one particular story. Mm-hmm. And it's – I think people forget when they play a game for 20 hours, like, the ending sucked. Yeah, but what about the 19 and a half hours of amazing story that you went through and all of the interactions you had with people and all of the things that affected you personally? Yeah, the last 5 minutes, maybe you didn't like that. But it's the entire universe as a story that is supposed to be, you know, that is Mass Effect. That is the whole thing.
It also saddens me that I know Mass Effect is a very popular franchise, but I always feel that Dragon Age gets the short end of the stick, because that game is so much more, especially the first one.
Oh, the first one was
so much more interesting on a, talk about shades of gray decisions, and it's basically the same structure as Mass Effect, but the writing is so much more nuanced, and the decisions that you're making are so much less clear cut, and every decision you make, every faction that you side with, and has a downside that if you want to play a quote unquote hero, you have to wrestle with
that game. Dragon Age, and the first Dragon Age, and Witcher 2, I think probably are the two games that actually, you know, make decisions, and there is real tangible differences in the story and how events unfold and how the game plays out. And granted, I mean, in the case of The Witcher 2, it's completely mind-boggling because
you do a whole different act.
Yeah, I mean, like the amount of work that it takes to create. Speaking of which, we got to talk about that Cyberpunk trailer.
We will, for sure.
But I mean, it's. You get a completely different second act depending on the events that take place, and completely different allies and different, you know, it's.
But I feel like when I played those Dragon Age and Mass Effect, I'm making choices based on, well, I want to be able to have this character with me later.
Yeah.
From a gameplay standpoint, so I don't want her to die now, and I might care a little bit, but with The Walking Dead, the writing is so strong that it's not like. Like, even in Mass Effect, you know, the game is written to be, you're supposed to be the good guy in the end. And you might be kind of a dick, but you're, you know, especially because of the genre of The Walking Dead, anything you end up deciding, it's still a really well-written story. It's written as if that was the only decision you could have made. It must be, it should have been designed to be
the gameplay. I guess the gameplay informs what kind of game you can really get out of it too. I mean, in Mass Effect, you might make those decisions like, oh, I don't want Rex to die because he's my best character or he's super powerful.
Right.
Whereas in Walking Dead, because the gameplay is not really
a factor in it,
you are just playing the narrative. You're playing the interactive DVD menu of the game. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think
that sounds so negative.
That's a perception, but I'm not saying that is
DVD
a negative
menu.
No, but I mean, like, you are making choices. Like, you know, I am selecting these people to live. But the thing that Walking Dead does that people, I mean, my perception of it is that you're not really playing a game, you're playing with timing, because all those things are going to happen eventually, and all you're doing is delaying the inevitable. I mean, like, you are delaying when people are going to die so you can maybe spend more time with them, but eventually it all comes down to these are the specific people that have to survive to tell the next story, and which is, you know, that is sort of how Walking Dead in the books is.
I mean, the show.
And the show is like that too, especially the last season, which was actually good, surprisingly. I thought that I had a ton of technical issues playing the game, so at that part of it was a problem for me. But I thought the story was fantastic. And I think that all the Mass Effect stuff, and people will hate me saying this, I think a lot of it is just like people really dislike. I mean, there were other problems with it, but people really disliked that ending. So it turned that series into, oh, fuck, Mass Effect.
No, like, that's how I feel about Battlestar Galactica and Lost. And
now, you know, I'll throw you one better.
The payoff
too,
is always the issue.
I agree, Dan. I think the game itself is really, really impactful, really emotional. But can you imagine if it were a game where there were, you know, 3 to 5 different paths through the game and divergent points in the 5 chapters, where at some point when you're talking to your friend about it, you're like, oh no, dude, I'm in a completely different town. And like, your friend's like, wait, what? Like, what are you? And yeah, you don't have those sort of water cooler moments where you're talking about, oh, this specific, you know, group of 4 decisions, which ones did you make? But you're going, look.
Kind of Half-Life. Heavy Rain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We had a conversation like that in the car. So I have to say, I don't think it's as off that mark as this statement implies.
Yeah.
However,
emotionally,
I also feel like sometimes that overwhelms my interaction with the game. If I might be thinking, oh, am I missing that whole area? Maybe I should have done that because I would have unlocked. I could have seen what that whole thing is, as opposed to I'm playing this story. I'm relating to them. My decision isn't made on will I get to see that area or not. Mm-hmm. My decision is, what do you think?
But
do you think that person's going to affect?
But I think in a game like The Walking Dead, though, that's written as strongly as it is,
right?
If it's written right, you're not going to be thinking about what's the good tree, what's the bad tree, or what's the which path do I want to see most, or how do I see both, you're going to be in that moment.
Yeah.
And basically, design-wise, I think you can solve a lot of that issue.
I hear you.
I have another thing I want to read, because this struck me as super cool regarding The Walking Dead. First of all, he said, this is from Ghostman2K78, who wrote in the forum that he wanted to say he would have never played Walking Dead if he hadn't heard about it on this podcast, so that's pretty cool. But he said he played the game, then watched his girlfriend play the game, and after she finished it, they discussed the choices they made and had an insightful conversation.
And left each other.
Yeah. Well, just listen.
Oh, God.
That told me more about her and told her more about me. And then he wrote, and then I felt bad about myself. Yeah. So there's maybe some spoilers in here, or just in the first episode, though. So at the beginning of the game, you briefly go to a farm and stay with a man and his son. At one point, the man is trying to dig into your past, and he asks something like, where are you headed? I answered with, we were going, etc. So then he asks, well, who are you riding with? And I replied with, nobody. He takes this as if he caught me in a lie, which isn't at all how I meant it. I knew I'd said we earlier, so I said nobody, as if to say nobody worth mentioning or none of your business. When my girlfriend played, she answered all his questions truthfully without holding back. We discussed this part of the game over dinner, and it soon turned into a heated discussion on whether it's better to be completely honest with people you meet or to hold back a bit so they can't use it against you later.
A little side note, never had that conversation.
And then she started reading my credit card statements.
Yeah. Honey, I think it's a really good idea to lie to people. Yeah.
I actually played the first chapter of the game twice. So I had this exact same experience where the first time I had forgotten how I played that first time and I had answered truthfully. And then when this happened, I realized, oh my God, I'm digging myself into a hole. This didn't happen the last time.
You're getting with the shovel right away.
That's what I'm saying is so the next area wasn't different or whatever, but boy, was it not a drastic experience. And suddenly I felt like, oh yeah, I'm a prisoner. He now is suspect to me. He didn't even get that from me the last time around, just because I answered one thing differently. And that's a fascinating thing about life,
it is completely unique to interactive entertainment. The fact that you have to make a decision as to how this story is going to unfold, even in those minor details, you're invested in a way that no other medium can approach. And I think this story that this guy, Ghostman2K78, wrote in the forum, it's all the proof you need that video games are art.
It's not even up for debate. It's like, I don't even think.
But it's like that conversation that he had with his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
It's like it completely, for me, not that we need to, but it legitimizes the hobby. And it makes me so excited for where video games are going, because the stigma of, oh, my girlfriend doesn't want to play video games, is dissipating. And that it's like entering the cultural vocabulary in a way that interactivity is going to inform life in a new, different, interesting way, as it did to this guy.
And in the past, you know, games had been largely centered on, you know, sort of more like what is they didn't try to hit you over the head with a lot of heavy emotional stuff. You know, because the thought, I think, was A, it's hard to pull off, but B, people don't really want to go through that sort of heavy-handed, like, you know, feeling bad about themselves when they're playing a game or whatever. But the reality of it is like with film, you know, yeah, there's some people that just want to go see Transformers or just want to go see, like, the big Hollywood stuff. But as the medium's matured, we now have people that are, I mean, especially in the independent space, people that are expressing deeply personal and impactful and very human and real-life-based things in game form, and it allows people to interact in a way that's just, you know, wasn't possible before. And I guess the point I'm making is the subject matter that we'll see in games, you know, and you know, you might play a game that makes you feel much like a really depressing, you know, indie film would make you feel, even if it's really good, like it's about heartbreak and you know, emotional suffering and all that sort of stuff. And you come out of it and you're like, whoa, that was some heavy shit, but wow, that was good. I think we'll start to see more of that kind of stuff. And that's really exciting to me.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where, I mean, especially the reaction to Bioshock Infinite, for example, like these games that are really interested in having something to say.
Right.
So, fuck you, Roger Ebert. Right. We got lots more to talk about in our final segment. Do not miss it. Come back and we'll be here. See you in a second.
Thumbs up on the music breaks.
Man, today. Micah never fails.
Who was that? Was that Hawken?
Christopher Hawken?
We can talk about Hawken. I know Jeff wants to mention we all got to see the cool teaser trailer of the new CD Projekt project, which I'm sure will be released on CD. It's Cyberpunk 2077, and then Dan proceeded to whip out his phone and show us a photo of the old pen and paper RPG Cyberpunk 2020.
Yeah.
And we realized, I was like, oh, is it a different property? And then we realized, oh, no, it's just that it's going to be 2020. In a few years. By the time this comes out, it might be 2020.
Like, if you're going to make the game 1984, you should probably pick a new year.
That's scary to think that, like, these guys are like, in 2020, dude, this is all going to be real.
Jetpack's still in for my jetpack.
Yeah.
You know what's funny, though, with yearing things is why if this Cyberpunk 2020 probably came out in late 80s, early 90s or something like that, right? So why do they do the same year increment? Like, clearly, we're going to have this problem again in 2070. You know, this game's going to look like, why does the world not look like this? Why not like triple your year as opposed to just doing it again?
I think it's because if you
know, Jeff, don't defend it. No. This is ridiculous. Why are you taking their side?
I think the only reason why it's still called, like, it still has a number associated with it is because it is within that same franchise, and it's just
be
like
2000. But I'm saying, but call it Cyberpunk 3033 so that we at least have a shot at being there.
We're all just fucking goo in jars, dude. The singularity has happened. It's fucking cats and dogs living together. Yeah,
unless you're setting a game in the past, probably not the best idea to use a year.
Well, actually, the coolest thing was Firefly is, and Serenity, that universe is in the 3000s, which I thought was smart.
That's what's so genius about Lucas is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Like, he fucking eschews that whole problem.
Just make it far enough in the future so that anybody who, you know, would complain about that would be dead by the time that the year rolls.
My ancestors are still going to have a big bone to pick.
I'm going to leave a note to my ancestors, be like, in 2077, I want you to be really mad about this game. That's exactly what
isn't ancestors only people before?
Whatever.
Descendants, I meant to say.
Yeah, sure. Descendants.
Look at Mr. Look at the year Nazi over here.
The future sisters.
Time Nazi. By the way, we should make a game. We should make an MMO that's single player and massive called Time Nazis.
I know the marketing on the word Nazi might not be really.
The weird thing, though, is there's no Nazis in it. It's just people who are really fucking particular about time.
Like, you're a minute late.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
The entire game is just a series of countdown timers.
Jeff's favorite game.
It's art. It's art.
No, you have to play as a guy who works at a hotel to wake people up.
The time Nazi.
You mean the concierge?
Concierge? Or no, you're just really particular. You're a chef, and there's this one spice that just fucking...
Oh, boy.
Any more examples to beat this into the ground?
Well, the teaser trailer for Cyberpunk 2077 is pre-rendered. It shows no gameplay, but it's pretty fucking cool. Cyber Lady gets shot. But this doesn't seem to bother her any because she's a cyber lady. And she's got, like, spiky arms and she's fucking music is cool.
It's like slow motion and
one thing I do not understand about the trailer, though, is there doesn't seem to be any dubstep in it. And I thought that was a requirement now.
For the future?
Yeah, I thought the future is dubstep.
No, why they had to retitle it, because in 2020 it wouldn't be dubstep. But when you get to 77, it's all dubstep.
Oh, God.
Anyway, thoughts?
I mean,
thoughts on dubstep, Zav?
Well, Skrillex, guys. that one part in Far Cry 3 was great. The thing that, it's really difficult to say anything about this game at all, because, I mean, it even says in the trailer, like, it's coming when it's done.
I like how they use that as, like, an awesome thing, like, yeah, we're not going to tell you. That's how fucking committed to our standards we are.
Wait, is the game called Cyberpunk 2077, or is that the release date? Like, I'm not entirely sure when that game... Oh, God.
Descendants joke.
It looks really great. CD Projekt Red, I mean, coming off The Witcher, that's a fantastic-looking game, and this...
Certainly is.
And playing, for
They're associated with the original creator of the pen and paper Cyberpunk
series. Yeah, this is official.
It's official. It's in the same universe.
Yeah.
And it looks... I mean, what they've shown of the concept art, and I mean, that stuff looks really cool. But I mean, we don't know anything really about the gameplay. We don't know what kind.
Let's wildly speculate, guys. What kind of game? Do you want it to be like Witcher in a sci-fi world?
It's a match three. That's what I want.
Yes.
You know what that would be? That would be a lot like, I don't know if you guys remember the PC game Rise of the Dragon.
No, I thought you were going to say Anachronox.
That was Blade Runner mystery. It was a point-and-click adventure where you are literally like Rick Deckard, and you're going around the cyberpunk universe investigating stuff. I mean, it is, and that's exactly what this Witcher and cyberpunk could be. I'm shocked. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm shocked that there aren't more cyberpunk games. Shouldn't we have a million of them? Shouldn't we hate them? We have a ton of fantasy games.
Am I
forgetting games?
I think that
some of them have like Syndicate. Pulled ideas like Syndicate, Deus Ex.
Yeah.
Some of those games have pulled some of that stuff out and sort of made it dressed up their own.
But I'll give you those. Syndicate and Deus Ex. And
but pure cyberpunk. Yeah. Pure cyberpunk is a hard sell to
the Deus Ex
to
DLC.
Anyone that doesn't know it. Like
Deus Ex DLC.
Like it's not, it's not like
the problem is video games are cyberpunk.
Right. Like
we're jacking in to play them. So
Shadowrun was
meta,
a series,
man.
Shadowrun was a series that did this as well, and there's a new Shadowrun coming out this year.
But that's, I mean,
it's a lot less
fantasy
easy.
Genre. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's so funny because like the gear so much it seems like we've taken more inspiration from Aliens than we have from Blade Runner, you know? It's so weird.
Mm-hmm.
Ridley Scott's pretty influential, but... Oh, sorry, this is a movie joke. Wrong pocket. Wrong show.
This goes over huge when he's hanging out with J.J. Abrams.
Oh, man. I'm excited about it. I want to see what the game looks like, obviously, but... I mean, they have cannot fail in my eyes. I mean, I love Witcher 1. I love Witcher 2.
Hey,
it was our game of the year last year when I worked with you guys.
And it couldn't be worse than the new Walking Dead game that's coming out. Am I right?
Oh, you the shooter?
Oh,
no,
yeah.
Did you see the promo for it with the guys from the show? It's hilarious.
Intentionally hilarious?
Michael Rooker reading off a prompter, not pulling it off. It looks, we are really excited. You can play as Merlin Earl. I'm so excited for this brand new video game title. You know,
speaking of which, total side note, I know we're diverting, I don't give a fuck because this is funny. Have you guys seen did you guys see the Qualcomm CES?
Oh my God.
No, I heard about it.
Yeah. Dude, it was the most rad, totally tubular, awesome thing in the world.
We're all Generation Mobile, aren't we, guys?
Oh my God.
Whether I'm pwning noobs or just hanging out.
No one said that. You're kidding.
Did you see this?
No, I didn't see it at all.
It was the first and last acting gig that these three kids had.
Welcome to the greatest 7 minutes of your life. When you go home and you Google, like, I think The Verge or somebody did like a compilation of like the most cringeworthy moments.
Oh, man.
And like the girl from
Star Trek, Alice.
Star Trek comes out and does not want to be there at all. Like, whatever they paid her, it was not enough for her to give a shit.
One of my personal favorite moments was the moment where Big Bird came out, and there's a guy wearing a Big Bird skin.
That's
not even a good enough description of how fucked up it was.
I've never heard someone start a sentence with, you know, what's even better was when Big Bird came out. I'm like, wait, what?
No, like, Big Bird comes out, that's, you know, that's a thing. Like, Big Bird, okay.
CES?
Well, you know,
does he have a line of television?
And then the guy cosplaying as half a Big Bird. As partial bird.
There are no words to describe.
Someone hollowed out a Big Bird and
he's standing there with like a piece of construction paper with some fucking Big Bird feathers around his head like a bonnet.
Did they not know that wasn't the dress rehearsal? Or like, was that? That's brutal.
Horrific. And the best part, my favorite part of the whole thing was when those three actors are talking, they're all like, I'm Generation Mobile because I'm a gamer or a popular girl or a guy. And then the fucking guy comes on, the CEO of Qualcomm comes on and goes, or a CEO. Yeah.
And he fucking, literally like that.
He fucking holds for applause, dude. And no one, he's just like Superman on the stage, like, or a CEO. God.
That sounds worse than any press conference Konami's ever done at E3.
Yeah. It is like this train wreck of, and then the fucking Desmond Tutu is on live from satellite. It is like, what the fuck?
This sounds like a fucking fever dream, man.
It's crazy.
This doesn't sound like a press conference.
Dude, as soon as you can, Google that, and it will be the best 7 minutes of your life.
Doesn't Microsoft usually do CES, like the keynote?
Ballmer thing? Is there running out like a crazy person.
There we go.
Yeah.
That was what I was waiting for. That sounds ridiculous.
Oh, man. It's great. Anywho, what were we talking about?
So, Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah.
Did anyone check to see if Qualcomm's stock price just dipped right after that thing? Because
interesting.
That's something that actually could affect their public image, obviously.
They were trying to sell this concept of Generation M, which is the mobile generation.
I just love the Buffalo Bill version of Big Bird.
I can't get so messed up. It's great.
God.
I don't know. What do we want to talk
Cyberpunk 2077. We're over it, yeah.
Yeah, we're over it. Zav, do you want to talk about Hawken?
Sure.
You've been playing that.
I have been playing that. And I was listening to the episode last week you guys were doing. You talked about whether or not the price of a game can affect the perception of it, right? And we've had this conversation, I think, about free-to-play games in general. Like, people see free-to-play, and we already brought it up with Terra. It's like, does that mean that the game is going to die because they can't sell it anymore, quote-unquote? And I've always had that perception about free-to-play games, and I don't really play all that many of them, but I started playing Hawken, which is this combination of MechWarrior meets Counter-Strike. It's a first-person multiplayer shooter where you are in these giant mechs and you can sort of outfit your mechs to pretty great detail with different kinds of weapons and special abilities and secondary abilities and tertiary abilities as well.
But it's fast-paced? It's not like rambling, thundering?
No, super fast-paced. Like, you can boost and you can even fly, and you have, depending on what kind of mech you're in, like, larger mechs are slower and they have less fuel output, so you can't boost for as long, or it takes you longer to climb when you're trying to fly. Smaller mechs have less armor and worse defense, but they're much faster and they have a lot of fuel output, so they can just blast around the entire world. And it's just really fast paced. It never feels like really slow and plodding. And the thing that's great about it is it's a free to play game that there are things that you could certainly buy to increase the experience. Like, I can buy better weapons. But the thing that the game does is, like, every single mech that you have is capped at a certain level. Like, not capped at a level, but you have to level these mechs. And in order to use that weapon that you want to buy for $3 or $4 in real money, you need to get that mech to a certain level. Like, you need to be level 8 in order to get there. So even if you want to go out and buy stuff, it actually forces players who, let's say, would want to spend money to become better by paying for it, they're forced to play the game just like you are forced to play the game. And that way, when you do get those weapons, if you decided to sort of crawl through the stages of leveling up, you could earn enough money to buy weapons in the in-game currency. Or if you want to get something that's even a little bit better, you could pay for it with real money. So it never really forces you. I did actually spend money on the game just because I was like, this is a great game. And, you know, I would like to get – I think I paid for double XP or something. And it's like, you ever play a free game on mobile and there's like – Jetpack Joyride's a good example. Like, I'll pay 99 cents for double coins. It's like, yeah, I don't really care about the coins, but like, I want to give these guys money. It's a great game. And I feel like that's what Hawken does really well. And they do the League of Legends thing, which is every 2 weeks or so they'll have like different mechs that will be free that you can just test out. And if you like it, you can buy it and stuff. It's really, really cool. And it's gorgeous. It has some amazing sound effects. And you get on these really great hot streaks of – the thing that I like about it too is like you can kill a bunch of different enemies. And then every single mech has this ability where you can – hit a button and a drone comes out and starts repairing your mech. And it allows you to like sort of jump into the fray, kill as many people as you can, sort of try to run away, heal yourself up, and then keep coming back. It's a really good system. The only thing that right now I think that there's a problem with the matchmaking because the way that it works is like every single mech is a certain level, but when you matchmake, you the players are put into a match, and then it asks you, okay, what mech do you want to use? So like there's no player level, it doesn't seem like, and if there is, at least there's no, it's hidden from public view. And so the matchmaking is just the only problem I think so far.
What's the game we played free to play? There's like jetpacks and sliding.
Tribes 2?
Tribes, yeah, Tribes Ascend or whatever.
Tribes Ascend, yeah.
Have you played that?
Yeah. So I mean,
fun factor wise, how does it compare to clearly mechs, but
well, I mean, it's Tribes and like PlanetSide 2 are like two games that are sort of in the same boat for me. I mean, Tribes is obviously a series that I really enjoy anyway, but I think that this reminds me of sort of what I wanted from like what is that series, the giant ass controller on the 360?
Steel Battalion.
Yeah. Like that's what I kind of wanted. This is what I kind of wanted as Steel Battalion. Like you never feel like you're a guy in a mech. You just feel like you are the mech. Like that's the only difference. But
yeah.
It's fast paced. It's multiplayer. It's like Chrome Hounds, which they tried to do.
Old Mech Warrior games on Xbox, right?
Yeah, or like Mech Assault.
But it sounds
Mech Assault. That's what
it's called. If they're moving fast, then aren't they? How is it different than?
Well, I mean,
you know what I mean. Gameplay wise, like,
sure.
What's
But every single, depending on what kind of mech you're using, they all have different kinds of speed rates, and you know you have to worry about special abilities. Like if you're playing as one of the giant mechs, the Berserker, you can actually plant your mech into the ground, and it turns into a turret, and then you become a turret in the game. So there's that. I mean, it's not like Tribes at all, because Tribes is like very like it's agility too. Like you are this dude with a jetpack, and you're flying around and stuff.
Right.
But it's I really like it. I just wanted to bring it up because of the whole free-to-play idea of whether or not you guys think that that actually has an impact on your decision to play something. And that's why I wanted to ask you about Terra. If now that it's free-to-play, do you have less of an interest in it? And like, has that changed?
It doesn't diminish for me.
It doesn't diminish for us, but I definitely agree that perceptions change based on pricing of something. Mm-hmm. Even if there's a game that I'm interested in and it's $30, you know, and it's not getting great reviews. I get it. I'm not going to get that game.
But then, before you get to the it's not getting great reviews,
just the $30 thing?
That's fucked up. That if you, I mean,
no, there's definitely.
I agree.
But then
with
there's
you.
Games like this.
But isn't that like, isn't that suck? It's like, we don't want to pay $60 for games. We want to pay $30 for games. So why?
Well, because of all games. I'm saying there's a game that that is being priced so much less. Here's the difference. There's games like I happen to love, as you know, Stuntman Ignition.
You do.
You know,
you're
and all the
Stuntman
games. You know, I love them. They're cheaper, which is great for me because I don't have to spend as much money. But I happen to love that kind of game. And
or
that
you could
game,
just pound your head against
that,
the wall.
But that game also like doesn't feel like it's competing against AAA title. When there's a AAA style game that is priced so much lower, you kind of get
what
it.
What about Torchlight?
Or Walking Dead.
It's $20.
Or, you know. A lot of the stuff that came out this year.
Unfortunately, wasn't any
Platinum Games. I don't know if you guys play Bayonetta. Platinum Games, who did Bayonetta, Anarchy Reigns just came out, which is a $30 game on 360 and PS3. It's like the first major release.
That's the
sometimes
problem,
it's
we
the
want,
way in.
We want less expensive
sometimes,
games.
Well,
but
here's the thing. Sometimes it's the way in, and sometimes you do have a negative perception of them. I'm trying to decipher what makes a difference. And I feel like it's the way in for like Mark of the Ninja or whatever. Those are cheaper games because they're smaller experiences and they're not doing what AAA titles do in terms of it's not trying to have the same quality of graphics. And I mean, it feels like the same quality because it's such a different style.
That's why I think it's weird with Hawken because it is a game like I mentioned Chrome Hounds, which was sort of this multiplayer, not multiplayer focus, but if you played multiplayer, it's like sort of changed the landscape of the world of like this faction has this much power and this faction has this much power. And this is not based on that. This is just purely a multiplayer game. But I feel like it is of a better quality than the last Steel Battalion game, which is a $60 experience, which is also a steaming pile of shit. And Hawken is free to play, and it's fucking awesome. It looks great. And yeah, it's a PC-only game, but I think the argument, too, is kind of weird because then when you start playing games on iOS, I think for me, I'm like, oh man, it's 99 cents. I totally want to buy it. Or it's free. I'll try this out. $5, $6. Yes. Like, it's the opposite totally. When it comes to that platform.
Totally.
And it's just such a weird perception that I think we have of like, oh, a free-to-play PC game is probably shit. Oh, this iOS game is $6? I don't want to play that. Like, it's like, where does that divide happen?
I think it's how it's positioned, though. But but I will say, too, with MMOs, the free-to-play, I think, is different. Like, I don't think Terra being free-to-play has a negative connotation because I kind of feel like every MMO should be free-to-play if it's not WoW. Because every MMO is kind of competing with WoW. They're all trying to take that, and it's going to be a hard mountain to climb, and it's been a hard mountain to climb. And I kind of feel like they all need to be that way.
Well, they sort of all are.
Right. Exactly. And that, it was like when Terra wasn't free to play, we were all kind of annoyed that it wasn't. It was like,
but the quality justifies.
It's not, but it needs to, but the MMO needs a user base for it to survive.
Your perception of that
is, so we want more users in the game. It's different than a single player game where it's not like I don't have less enjoyment because there aren't other users playing it. I need other users to be playing it. Allow them in.
Right.
Let's all play it because we all need to play together.
Your perception of it has changed too, I'm sure, because you've played it. So you know what the game is like. And I think the business model that I would assume would maybe be the thing that MMO companies should get more focused on if they want to make that initial money is the Guild Wars 2 route.
Yeah.
You buy the product and now it's free.
Yeah.
And you buy the expansions.
That's what Terra will be now. That's what they all. Secret World's like that, right? When it went free. I mean, Star Wars is like that. No,
but you don't have to actually purchase the product.
You don't have to.
No, I mean you can
even
download.
Even with Old Republic, you don't have to actually buy.
Well,
that.
No, you can play the first 15 levels, I think, for free. If you wanted to continue, you would have to purchase it. Yeah,
right.
But the client itself, I believe, is going to be free. Now, Terra, I think the news about free to play just happened today. So,
yeah, yesterday.
Yeah. So I don't know exactly the details, but my assumption is that
I think
you have
to buy the game, but then it's no monthly. Maybe
I don't
wrong.
Think it, I think it's free. Free
it's going
free,
for free, for free.
Frizzles.
Yeah. For real.
Forever, ever.
True.
Because that is a barrier of entry if they don't do it that way.
I agree. I would play if Secret World, I didn't have to buy the box, I would be playing it right now. Because I do want to try, I've always wanted to try Secret World out.
You know, that I think that game you would really like too because that pulls the experience.
Oh boy.
That pulls the experience out of the game where you find mysteries within that game.
Yeah.
And then you can go to like Google and search stuff. And
it's like not Prawn.
It's a little bit like, remember that old EA game that they tried to release years ago, Majestic, where it like tried to put you into the real world and they'd like the characters in the game would fax stuff to you. This is back when you had a fax machine, by the way. And like they'd call you and like they try to pull that stuff in. It's not to that extent, but it's kind of a cool experience.
Wow. Sequel.
Well, if I can't get faxes, I really don't want to play it.
Don't worry, you can in Cyberpunk 2020.
Someday. Jeff, you got any cool iOS hits you want to give to the people?
Sure. Yeah, a couple things I've been playing recently that I'd like to highlight. Actually, just a real quick mention to Joe Danger iOS, which just came out, I guess, yesterday, if you're listening to this on Friday. It is, you know, basically almost a fully featured version of, you know, Joe Danger. It basically has all the bells and whistles that the console version would have, but it's all designed around touch control. And so, for example, you know, you hold on the left side of the screen or you hold down to duck, let go to jump. It's all really easy. You swipe to do, you know, flips and tricks and stuff like that. I think it feels really good. You know, your mileage may vary depending on how allergic you are to touch controls in general, but it's not like virtual sticks or any of that BS. It's pretty solid and it looks great. And the other thing, which is another, you know, if you're allergic to virtual sticks, avoid. But if you're not, definitely check it out, is been playing Ravensward's Shadowlands, which is the second Ravensward game. And it's, you know, it's not Oblivion. I mean, it's not, you know, Skyrim. It's but it is probably the closest approximation to that I've seen on the iPad. I mean, it's really fun. You're roaming around an open world. The combat feels good. You know, it is virtual sticks and stuff, but it looks great. And, you know, I'm not super far into it. But, you know, I'm already exploring caves and killing trolls and, you know, doing all sorts of cool stuff.
Is the gameplay in that, the combat, is it transitioned into like an Infinity Blade kind of scenario?
Oh, no. This is like, you know, you're moving your dude around with a stick and then you have, you know, you got, I think they give you five, like hotbar slots at the bottom. So if you want to equip a spell or a bow or a, you know, an alternate weapon or a potion or whatever, you can have all that stuff down there. And then, you know, you've got an attack button. You can hold the block, you know, shield okay. come into play. It's like, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty good.
Well, speaking of virtual sticks, we never really talked about all the raft of crazy physical sticks that have been announced at CES, all these add-ons.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
What was that, the Razer thing? The, what was it called?
Is that the one where the... Like
it's like it looks like the steering wheel of an X-wing. It's like got two bars on the side.
It's a tablet that's essentially a mobile PC.
Yeah,
and it's I think it's like $1,000 for the low end one and $1,200 for the high end one. But it doesn't actually come with those sticks anymore. Like they've detached that, and you can purchase that separately.
The sticks look kind of rad. I mean, it looks almost like the Move controller, where it's like this big round bar that is hanging off either side of your tablet.
I think the trend that's been happening, especially on Kickstarter, are like Android-based devices, like Android-based consoles. And now this is sort of the opposite end. Instead of an Android-based thing, it's a computer. It's a tablet that is as powerful as a computer. And let's say it connects to Steam and you can download your PC games on it and play it with those sticks.
Yeah.
So I think they showed – was that the game they showed Hawken with? I know that or the – the other NVIDIA thing was what they showed Hawken with. But yeah, it's just so like you get to pay $1,200 for a mobile PC. You can build a PC for much less than that, that plays all of these things. We're still in that transition period of like, where are we to land when it comes to mobile? Like, what is it that people actually want?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be very interesting next week when Garnett comes back. He's going to describe all of his adventures at CES land and seeing all that stuff up close and personal. But for us, first I think we need some finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
All right. Zav D'Amatos, finish them.
First of all, thanks a lot for having me. It's always a pleasure to come here and hang out with you guys. And congratulations to Dan on the... on the film,
totally.
Directing gig.
Thank you very much.
I'm really excited for you, and I'm excited as a fan of that series. I want to just say on joystick.com, we started doing our podcast live now. You can watch the video podcast happening on Thursdays.
I watched it today.
Oh, fantastic. You were the one.
I did.
Did you do it live?
Do it live.
I was the guy typing in, suck it, all the time. No, I didn't do that.
Oh, man. I really got to stop reading all those comments right on there. So we're doing that on joystick.com. We're doing that on Thursdays. And, of course, our regular show goes up on Fridays as well. So check that out. And you can follow us also on our YouTube channel where all that stuff is broadcast at youtube.com/joystick or just www.joystick.com.
Cool. Mr. Mattis.
Yes. So just a real quick mention of a preview build of a game that you might want to keep an eye on if you're sort of chomping at the bit for a, you know, space-based shooter. I've been playing Strike Suit Zero a little bit, which is, you know, it's basically like a Wing Commander-esque game, except the sort of hook of it is that you can eventually earn or, you know, get a ship that can transform into a mech.
Sweet.
So what advantage that gives you is from a gameplay perspective is you're flying around and doing banks and rolls and turns, but then you turn into this mech and you can basically pivot in like first and aim in first person mode. So it's like guys are flying by you and you're just like, you know, shooting them like you would a shooter and then transform back and fly away. And
Rad.
It creates this pretty, pretty interesting dynamic. It's still the build I played was pre-release, but and it's, you know, still in development, but looks really solid so far. So, like I said, if you're a space shooter fan, you might want to keep that on your radar. I think it's probably going to get a release sometime in the next few months, but, you know, not announced yet. So,
am I the only one who's old enough here to remember Thexter?
Oh, no, I remember Thexter.
I loved that game. It blew my freaking mind on the PC.
I didn't watch last season of Dexter.
I was trying to make a lisp joke so bad. And I couldn't
kill people.
Figure it out.
Thexter.
He's a serial killer.
My name's Thexter. Dan Trachtenberg, you got a finishing move for us?
I'm going to blow people's minds other than you, Jeff, because you are aware of this practice that I learned from an internet video. And I finally...
Oh, God.
I finally...
get X-ray.
I finally...
We're clearing the room.
I finally included it into my life, and I want to relive the past 31 years because I've been doing it wrong, and many of you are as well. There's a video that describes the right way to eat a cupcake.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, am I wrong?
That's
am I wrong?
Amazing.
It's amazing. Here's how you eat a cupcake, folks. I'm going to change your life. You twist off the bottom, and you literally, all you have to do is do a twisting motion, and it will come off in a perfect circle. You place that bottom on top of the cupcake, and you hold it like a sandwich, and chow down. You no longer are you getting just icing. No longer are you having a corner, and it's all over your face now. Now you can eat it the proper way, the most delicious way. Every bite has icing. Every bite has cake. It is amazing.
It's important to you for you to say, though, when you twist off the bottom, you're moving halfway up the bottom of the cupcake. So you're twisting off just the...
So you have enough for the sandwich.
Exactly. Right. So there's still some cake left underneath.
Good point. I'm glad you're here. Good point.
I think we just discovered how Oreo was invented.
Yeah, it is kind of like a Oreo.
So everyone's going to have you're totally going to have a cupcake later. It's going to blow your mind.
If there's any chance you are listening to this episode on Friday and are in Los Angeles and it's before 9 o'clock, get your ass over to Double Jump, people. It's at the Nerd Melt this time. We used to do it, or we have done it at UCB for a few times. This is going to be the first time we're doing it at Nerd Melt, which is a Meltdown Comics on Sunset Boulevard.
I'm going to be there.
Dan's going to be there. And a whole lot of really cool guests. We got, I think, Chris Hardwick, the Nerdist himself, is going to be one of our guests. Ooh. It's going to be really, really fun. And if you're listening to this after Friday and you were there, thanks for coming. I really appreciate that. If you didn't come, you're a little bastard. All right, that's going to do it. If you're sticking around for the tailgate, we're going to do some playoff tailgate action. Otherwise, we're wishing Garnet a good trip to Las Vegas and safe travels home. He'll be back next week. But until then, I want to thank Zav for being here. Thank you.
Thank you. Joystick.com.
I want to thank Jeff, as always, for being awesome.
Thank you, Jeff, for being a great host.
Oh, thank you. And Dan, thanks for coming out, man. It's been a huge week for you, and carving out some time for us is really, really cool.
My pleasure.
Dude, yeah, first interview. Awesome.
Yeah, we nailed it. We got the exclusive first. Any tidbits you want to share about the people have been waiting entire episode?
I already said The Rock is going to be ampersand.
I appreciate that.
And
good ideas. Good ideas.
How do you think I got the job, guys?
How do we get The Rock in?
All right. See you guys next week. Until then, we are goats. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. All right. We had a very exciting wildcard weekend if you didn't watch the games. I didn't think they were particularly exciting, except for that Seattle-Washington game was pretty fun. But everything else was kind of meh. Fucking Del Rio still dominating at 3-1, winning the season, beating my Niners in the last week, and also he's 3-1. Micah, were you the one who made the picks last week? Yeah, he's tied 3-1 also. James, which was 2-2 last week. Mattis was also 2-2. And the guest spot was 2-2. I don't remember who it was. Who was that? Oh, it was Nicole.
Yeah.
With her erudite.
Yes, her expert
picks.
Commentary.
I scraped in the bottom of the barrel at, not really. Garnet's a little lower. I was 1-3 and Andrea was 1-3. Garnet, of course, consistent at 0-4.
People saying that you should just pick opposite Garnet are not shitting.
It's out pretty well. Yeah. 0-4 with his picks.
Nicole parodied picks last week.
And did better than me.
Did better than Garnet and you.
Yeah, I know. We are terrible at this. So without further ado, we're going to continue to be terrible. We're picking the playoff games this weekend. First up is Baltimore at Denver. Ray Lewis is continuing his tour of last games of the year, playing against Denver and Peyton Manning. So who wants to go first? Zav, you like hockey.
I do. And it's back.
It is back.
It's coming back.
Strike is over.
49 games in a season. Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna play the opposite game, and I'm going to pick the Baltimore Ravens just because I can see who did not pick the Baltimore Ravens.
I forgot to mention the spread. Denver is favored by 8.5 points. So you get 8.5. So he's taking Baltimore. What about you, Mattis?
I don't think... I mean, an 8.5-point spread doesn't mean much in the playoffs, so...
Playoffs? Talking about playoffs?
Playoffs.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Baltimore as well.
All right. Trachtenberg.
Being in Philadelphia, man,
yeah.
I'm
going
to pick the Eagles. They have a shot, guys.
Yeah.
They're going to storm the field.
First of all, this is an AFC game.
Doesn't matter.
They're going to storm
based off of proximity, I'm going to go with Baltimore.
All right. Wow. Three Baltimores. Andrea is also going with Baltimore. The booth, what we got? Del Rio's going with Denver.
Oh,
and
shit.
I know. We should make him pick first, huh? What about you, Micah? He doesn't think Ray Lewis can do it this time. He's picking Denver, too. I am going with Denver as well. I'm going to give the points. I think Peyton Manning comes out. I think they're going to the Super Bowl. I think they are going to beat New England. Spoiler. I think they're going to beat New England in the AFC Championship game and go to the Super Bowl. Garnett and James are also picking Denver, which means I'm wrong. All right. The second game is my beloved 49ers at home, hosting the Green Bay Packers. Garnett and James are both picking the Packers. The Niners are not getting the customary home 3-point advantage. They're only getting 2.5 points at home, so people like the Green Bay as well. What do you guys think, Dan?
I think this is the one that the Eagles come back on.
Amazingly, they get on a plane. They fly to San Francisco.
You know what Philly fans are like.
You know, no one would ever see it coming. They'd win it all.
I think that's called the hoopty hoop or something, right? And you pull that maneuver. No, in solidarity, I will go with San Francisco.
Oh, I'm so glad we can stay friends.
Solidarity with Rice Aroni.
Mattis,
you're from there too, right?
I'm a Bay Area guy too, so that.
Yeah, that's right. You're a 49er fan.
Yeah, I am.
Taking the Niners.
I also go with the Niners because I'm playing the opposite game of anything that Garnett picks.
Andrea went with the Niners. Del Rio, are you going to stab me in the face and back? Stabbing
boo.
Away.
In the face.
Micah, are we friends still? He's having a tough time. Yeah, he was going Niners.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. So the third game, of course, Seattle. That's Del Rio's home team, who is looking really scary right now. Coming back 14 points down against Washington last week. Man, their defense looks really strong. I kind of want another shot at them. I want the Niners to play them in the NFC Championship game. That would be awesome. They're at Atlanta, and I don't know where this spread is coming from because Atlanta is the number one seed in the NFC. They are the top team in that division, and they're still According to this, they're giving 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Seattle was getting the – anyway, okay. Well – a lot of people are picking Seattle. What do you guys think? James is picking Seattle. Garnett and Andrea are picking Atlanta. So you know where they sit.
I'm going to go with Seattle just because I've been listening to the show the last couple of weeks. And every single time Seattle comes up, everyone except for Del Rio picks Seattle. Everyone picks the opposite team.
Yeah. Now,
I'm going to ruin it for you.
You've now jinxed it.
And, and he won. The league,
He did win the league, and he's ahead right now. All right, Mattis, what about you?
Okay, I can feel the bile rising up in the back of my throat as I say this, but I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
The Seahawks. Dan?
Yeah, I actually think this is the one that the Eagles are going to lose. they're still going to fly over and play.
They're going to be prevented from rushing the stage.
But they're going to lose this one.
The gates will be too high for them to rush the field.
But I'm a big fan of PAX, so I'm going to pick Seattle.
All right. I'm picking Atlanta because I'm a fool. All right, we know who you're picking, Del Rio. You got your hometown boys, right? Yeah. He's clawing away. Micah? Seahawks. God damn it. I sided both with Garnett and against the...
Doomed.
I'm a fool. But I can't watch that game and not root for it. But I kind of want to see Seattle and San Francisco. Anyway. All right. Houston at New England. Houston looking very weak. New England looking very strong. New England giving 9 points. Houston, whew. Garnett's picking Houston, though. He's taking the points. He'll take that 9 points. Andrea and James are going with New England. What say you, Zev D'Amatos?
I'm going to go with the Patriots.
Patriots, because you are a patriotic American citizen.
Wearing my Captain America
t-shirt. He is wearing Captain America. And his
and Toronto Maple Leafs hat.
Right, Zav.
Enigma wrapped in a fool.
Jeff, what say you, sir?
Man, that I know it's that spread, but whatever. I'm going to go with the Pats.
All right. Dan?
Well, as we know, I can't pick the Eagles this time because they lost the last game.
This would be the most surprising victory.
This is their comeback. This is the big. This would be the most.
This would be a real surprise.
I knocked out and come the back. Last game they weren't a part of.
Would be the most surprising.
Out of proximity, I'm going to go with and my love for clam chowder. I'm going to go with New England.
All right, New England clam chowder. I am also picking New England and giving the points. I think it's a blowout. In the booth, what do we got? Patriots for Del Rio. Micah? Pats. Boy, everybody's on the Pats. I do not want them to get to the Super Bowl, but they look too strong at home. It's going to be hard for Houston to do anything. That is it. I hope you enjoy watching your footballs. I hope I gain a little ground on the big man in the booth.
Got up your ground game.
I got to up my ground game. Indeed. Thanks for the,
up your ground game.
Thanks for the
plug away. Plug away, bro. Plug away.
This has been a real fun one, guys. Yeah. Thanks for sticking around. Until next week. We'll see you later.